Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And joining me on tonight's episode, first up, is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Deason. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going well, Chris. As you're alluding to already, we got a surprise for listeners tonight. We have a third guest, and we're going to talk about Five Queens.
That is true. That is true. So our guest this evening, not to be confused with our normal guest, Richard Reeder. It's not Richard Reeder. It's a different Richard. We found another Richard. His name is Richard Zabo. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Close enough. Zabo.
Zabo. Oh, man, I'm bad with that.
Zabo. No Z, remember? Silent
Zabo. Zabo. Okay. One of these days I'll get used to it. But anyway, I know him as Richard. I know him as Monk. He has many aliases, as it were. But welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. We haven't had a podcast that I've been a part of in a long time, and I want to get back in there and, you know, throw some unpopular opinions around.
Excellent. Well, you are always more than welcome to join us for more episodes to come. Absolutely. The more the merrier. Richard and I, we go back a few years. We met at a Star Trek convention down in Vulcan, the one I go to normally every year. I didn't go last year. But we met about 6 years ago or so. And Richard has been on a couple of podcasts that I've done. He was on an episode of Geek Followed. He was on an episode of Trek 1701. But it's been a few years. But he's back this evening. I asked him to join us. Because Richard, as I said, we met at a Star Trek convention, so he is a Star Trek fan. And for this episode, we're talking about Star Trek Picard. The season just ended. The season finale at the time of this recording aired yesterday. And we got some opinions that we want to throw out there. We got some stuff to talk about. But first, I'm going to go around the table, and I'm going to ask each of you, what is your Star Trek origin story? Like, how long, like, what got you into Star Trek, and how long have you been a fan? I'll kick it off. I've said this before on the podcast, but, you know, to quote Stan Lee, every comic book is someone's first comic book. So every podcast episode is someone's first podcast episode, maybe of that particular podcast, maybe of all podcasts, who knows. So anyone who doesn't know me, I've been a Star Trek fan for as long as I can remember. I asked my mom about it not too long ago, and she said that, you know, from the time I was little, you know, I was watching Star Trek whenever it would come on TV. She recorded Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan on a VHS tape, and I guess when I was, you know, a toddler, if she wanted to keep me quiet, keep me, you know, entertained, she would just put that on the VCR, and I would just sit there completely mesmerized by what I was seeing. So my origin goes all the way back to the original series. That's what I grew up watching in Canada on CBC, Star Trek, the original series. I didn't actually get into Next Generation until it was in its third season. Because just where I lived at the time, we didn't have a channel that had it. But then we moved, and then we were able to get, using the old antenna, we were able to get Channel 13, which carried Star Trek Next Generation. So I watched it Season 3 going forward. And then when it was re-showing in syndication, I caught up on the first two seasons. My favorite Star Trek is probably Deep Space Nine. But Next Generation's a close second. It's very close. And yeah, when I heard that Star Trek Picard was announced, I was very excited for the possibilities. Kevin, what is your Star Trek origin story?
I am apologies. I am not as versed as you and Rich are. Well, as you've told me, Rich is.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, it was, you know, Star Trek would be on sometimes, and my dad would occasionally watch it. You know, there's not a game on. There's nothing. You know, there's nothing else he's interested in, but he would watch it and enjoy it and had appreciation of it.
Yep.
But more, it was on. You know, I don't think he sought it out. And I would see it a few times, and I liked it. But my sci-fi roots weren't much deeper than Star Wars yet. Comics and wrestling were the big things for me, and Star Trek was like something else when I could. And, you know, I had some books and some toys and stuff like that as you accumulate, you know, random stuff. But what got me was my mom says, hey, there's a Star Trek club starting at the library. I thought, oh, all right, I'll head down and be into that and, you know, talk to other geeks like myself. And I was probably 13, 14 at the time. And I go down there, and it's full-blown Trekkie, which I did not know this world existed yet. I really thought I was just... because I was already hanging out at, like, the comic shop, but I didn't know full-blown Trekkie world. So they had... you know, here's a little questionnaire to see your Trek knowledge and what level you are. And I was pretty much Wesley by the end of this, and everyone knew it. But they played, oh my gosh, I can't, the pilot. My gosh, I can't believe I can't think of this right now. The original series pilot with Pike.
The Cage.
I think that's
The Cage.
Yeah,
there we go. I wanted to say Cajun, and I was like, no, that's wrong. They played that on a bootleg VHS because this is far enough back. It wasn't, YouTube certainly wasn't even imagined yet. Internet was barely a thing for your common person at the time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't an official release because it kind of didn't count yet. So here's this bootleg thing. I'm like, oh, there's a whole other world here I am not aware of yet. So... I was real, I was more into the world than into this group. And the group fizzled out real quick anyways. But now I'm like, okay, there's other stuff. So this got me into the comic shop, like digging through stuff. Oh, here's old Starlog magazines. Here's this, here's that. And it got me on a different path, but I didn't have an outlet for that path. So I always remained like a B level for me. You know, it never became my obsession. And honestly, doing this podcast for the last, I think we're at like half a year that we've been doing it together again here.
Yep.
For Chris and I, it's brought the interest back. I'm like, I really need to just sit down and go through it. Unfortunately, we're kind of in a golden age of TV where there's so much good geek TV.
Yep.
Working in something else is tough here.
I miss those days.
I have like a 101 introductory class level with random, insights a little higher up. And enough that I'll hang with this conversation and surprise Chris, I got your present today.
Oh.
I watched the whole season.
Really? Oh, nice.
Yep.
Excellent. okay, so Kevin, out of the Star Trek that you have watched, do you have a favorite series?
Anything other than DS9 is a wrong answer.
The thing, like, I can't say DS9 because I haven't watched enough of it.
I really like.
I have to say, Next Generation just because that was where I came in. You know, so like I have an appreciation for original Star Trek, but yes, it's cartoony in a way. You know, I have appreciation for some of the movies, pretty much like. You know, the general consensus for which ones are good and which ones aren't. But Next Generation is what I saw the most of. I saw DS9 when it started and random ones here or there, but not enough to follow the entire narrative. So I don't have, the weight of it.
Well, in a way, Kevin, I envy you because now you can go back and watch Deep Space Nine and fall in love with it. Because I guarantee you that's going to happen.
It's never like the first time either. I've seen DS9, the whole show, many, many times, and it's never quite like the first time.
Yeah. But, excellent. Rich, let's get your Star Trek origin story.
Well, I just had to look up the name of the episode because there's so many and I couldn't remember. I didn't want to give any false ideas of my genius or anything like that, but I think it was about 1993, 8-year-old kid, you know, just probably stuck at home, rainy day, something like that, flipping through the channels. I'm bored, you know, just me and my mom home, and I come across this show, and I see this weird-looking dude. He's got these big, ugly teeth, kind of like a Nausicaan, but they're more reddish. They're, I forget the name, but the character's name is Esoc, and Picard had been to his planet, and I see this bald dude. I'm like, who's this guy? He's got this red uniform, and I start watching, and I'm like, whoa. And my mind was blown from that moment on, and I just got into it, you know, watched. It was a rerun at the time because it originally aired in 1990. So from there, I just watched whenever it was on TV, always watching reruns. And then some years later, my mom had got divorced, and then she met somebody else, and he happened to be straight-up geek, kind of like how I was going to turn out. On VHS, he had the entirety of Deep Space Nine, TNG, and Red Dwarf, a bunch of other like cool sci-fi things, and I just got lost in this world of sci-fi. And I came out on the other side, and I was a Trek freak, as I would say at some points. I have a huge Star Trek inspired tattoo on my back, and 100%, I gotta say, DS9's my favorite, followed closely by TNG. Followed by Enterprise. A little bit further back is Voyager. TOS is kind of on a different plane for me because I appreciate and respect that that's where it all came from. And there are some episodes I like and some I don't, like with anything. But I kind of put that off on its own separate mantle because that's like the birthplace of Trek. And that means something a little bit different for me. But yeah, beyond that, the movies, I enjoyed pretty much all the movies, even the ones that some say are like no good or anything like that. I pretty much like them all. I have my nitpicks, but the newest three, though, the Kelvin timeline, not my favorite. They're okay, but not something I would, you know, write home about, as it were. And then my big first convention. Sorry, almost done.
Oh, my big no worries, first, buddy.
My big first convention, Curtis and I, my best friend, we decided, you know what, F it, we're going to go all the way to Vegas. And we did. I did Vegas in 2011 with a couple other friends, and then I did Vegas again with Curtis in 2012. And the atmosphere is crazy. The people there are amazing. I got a nice, nice picture with Avery Brooks and Curtis. And then we started going to Vulcan, and we just fell in love with the quiet atmosphere. It's very community orientated. Like, I became friends with Chris. I didn't make any friends really when I was out in Vegas. It was too busy, too hectic.
Yeah.
But I made friends out in Vulcan, and you being one of them. And you know what? Here we are today, and 6 years later, still chatting, still on my Facebook. You know, still buddies.
Excellent.
So that's my origin story in a nutshell.
Yeah, I totally forgot to mention that. Yeah, you've been to the Vegas conventions. Unfortunately, I've never went. I want to go one year, but it always seems like I could never swing it. But one of these days, and I totally envy you for meeting Avery Brooks. Like I've managed to meet Shatner and Picard, or Shatner and Stewart. I mean, Kirk and Picard. But Avery Brooks, like, I want to meet him so bad because with Deep Space Nine being my favorite show. Although I would say Picard's probably my favorite captain, but Sisko is definitely a close second, without a doubt.
I got to say, for me, Sisko's my favorite captain, Picard being second. But I mean, just a quick story. I will always remember meeting Avery Brooks, because at first he didn't know that it was going to be like a double picture with Curtis and I. And he looks right at Curtis and he says, "Hey, young man." And he just goes in for this big handshake. And I just come up behind him like, "Hey, me too." And I shake his hand. And I'm a big guy and I got really big hands. And his hands just like almost engulf mine. Like, dude's
really?
Probably... Yeah, he's probably 2 or 3 inches taller than I am, so he's probably 6'4", 6'5".
Oh, wow.
And he's just so amazing. Like, he's just, like, look on his face, like, he was happy. Like, he looked like he was enjoying himself, and he just seems like a really, really good dude. Just straight up.
That's awesome. I like to hear the positive interactions that people have. Like mine, when I met Patrick Stewart. Awesome person, like very friendly, and you know, after the picture was done, he looked at me and said, "Well done," in his, you know, Shakespearean, you know, authoritative Captain Picard voice, and I just about fainted. It was awesome. It was so cool.
Fanboy moment.
Yeah. Like I literally froze. Like I couldn't move, and then the security guy was like, "Excuse me, sir, you have to leave now." And then I kind of came to, I was like, "Oh yeah, right, okay, yeah, I gotta go." But excellent, no, that's awesome. All right, so next on the list. Before we get into any specifics about the show, because we're here to talk about Star Trek Picard. Before we get into any specifics, when this was announced. I want to say it was at the San Diego Comic-Con 2018. They had the big reveal where Alex Kurtzman was on stage saying, we've got the next star of the next Star Trek series that we're planning. And he's here, let's bring him out. And then the doors open and then Patrick Stewart walks out. And everyone went apeshit, myself included. We found out anything before we saw episode one, what were you guys hoping to get out of this series? Like, what were you hoping for? Like for me, just real brief, I, you know, was hoping we would get some answers. You know, I was hoping, you know, because in the books, the Star Trek novels that they're still doing, I really like the direction that they took Picard. Like, they basically, Picard stayed on the Enterprise. He stayed captain of the Federation flagship. He listened to, you know, from Star Trek Generations, he listened to Captain Kirk when Captain Kirk said, you know, don't let them promote you, don't let them transfer you, don't let them do anything that takes you off the bridge of that ship because while you're there, you can make a difference. And he took that to heart and he stayed. And Worf ended up becoming his first officer. Geordi is still, you know, in engineering. I think they, aside from that, they got new characters, because I think he did marry Dr. Crusher, but she's off at Deep Space Nine. Or maybe they're separated now, I'm not sure. And Riker's an admiral, and of course he's moved on with, you know, being married to Counselor Troy, and so on and so forth. I really like the way the books handled Picard, and that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see him on the bridge of the Enterprise. I wanted to see Worf, you know, as his number one. I wanted to see Admiral Riker come in and give them, you know, some orders, what they need to do. I wanted to see some cameos. I wanted to see Q, you know, and I wanted to see Guinan come back. There was a whole bunch of things I, you know, had fingers crossed I was hoping to see. But we'll get into what we actually saw next. But Kevin, what were you, or were you hoping for anything, like when you heard this announcement?
Well, like we talked before the first episode about, you know, things that we thought and ideas and everything. And I really thought when it started, it'd be one season. Let me clarify. My theory was it would be one season with Patrick Stewart. Because the point you're making before was it's the Star Trek series without the ship's name in the show name. The name of the ship in the show name.
Yeah.
Or, you know. Without a ship, without a base, yeah. without something.
Which I was cool with. I thought that was a neat approach.
But anyway. So my theory was it's one last mission, one last run for Picard, who dies at the end. And in honor, the ship is now called the Picard. And you're following this new adventure of this new group living on his legacy. And that was honestly what I expected of it. Now, not to jump ahead, I was a little right on what I thought was going to happen on the show. But that's very little.
Yep.
And 5 minutes later, not quite, but anyways.
But no, that sounds amazing. That's actually really a really cool concept. As much as I was getting kind of annoyed that they would keep naming the show after the ships, you know, like if they did end up with that, where the ship ended up being called the Picard, I'm assuming this would be a Starfleet vessel, not the Rocinante or whatever Rios' ship's called. I know it's not the Rocinante, that's the Expanse, but
La Sorrenta.
La Sorrenta, yeah. But anyway, Richard, what were you hoping to see prior to actually seeing the show?
To be honest, I knew that it wasn't going to be any kind of extension or, you know, next generation. I knew that it was going to involve Picard and some new storyline that they've come up with. Unfortunately, current Star Trek, the storyline, a little bit contrived. I was not expecting much. And because of that, I wasn't terribly disappointed. But I was hoping for more like what Kevin said, something in that vein, kind of like a strong homage or something to celebrate the depth of Star Trek, the depth of Picard's character himself, and everything else around it. I think that they, no spoilers or anything, but they may have gone the opposite direction than I had hoped.
Yeah. All right, well, let's, before we get into discussing the finale, let's do an overall discussion of the series from episode 1 to 9. Just some general stuff. However you want to divide it up, if you want to divide it up pros and cons, that's kind of how I went. So however you guys went, that's completely fine. And I've been taking notes for weeks now, so I've got a few notes here. So I'll kick it off for the overall discussion of the series, episode 1 to 9. And I want to first say that I didn't hate this show. I you know, like today, you know, on Facebook, you know, because I'm on some different science fiction groups, and people would comment on it. And, you know, and I'm always careful on what I comment on. But, I mean, I'm honest. You know, I gave my opinion. You know, I agreed with some of the people's opinions. And then, of course, because it's social media, you get attacked for having a negative opinion. You get attacked for, you know, telling things or saying things that people don't like to hear. Right,
you get attacked for having a different opinion than they do.
Yes, and I just want to stress, you know, like honestly, like I'm looking at my list of pros and cons, and there's definitely more cons than pro. That being said, I didn't hate this show. You know, like if I was to give it a rating, and if you guys want to give it a rating, you can as well. I give it a 2 out of 5. You know, 5 being excellent, 0 being abysmal. I give it a 2. So, you know, it's, you know, I would give Discovery a 1. So it, to me, this show is better than Discovery, but it's not better than Deep Space Nine or Next Generation or even Enterprise. It's not better than Voyager. Those shows, and I mean, we've only got one season so far. But, you know, and people point, like to point out that, well, you know, most Star Trek series have a rough first season, and that is true. Although I would say that probably the original series, the first season was in some ways better than the other two seasons, but I digress. It is true that, you know, TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, they all had rough first seasons, you know, like they were trying to find their footing. And maybe this is the same with Picard. But the advantage that Picard has is that, you know, they got the advantage of hindsight. They get to look back at all the mistakes that the other Star Trek series made and not make those mistakes. So, you know, whereas TNG, and they, with them being on CBS All Access, having access to, you know, new special effects technology, you know, a nice budget, that sort of thing, they really had an opportunity to make something really stellar right from the get-go. And unfortunately, they just didn't get there. Again, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. So I'll start with the pros that I have listed here. Actually, you know, even though it was slow to, although it turned out to be a negative, the show really began, you know, very slow. And then at the end, I really felt, especially in the last two episodes, everything was rushed. Because I think they had taken so long to build things up that, boom, they had to pay it off right away in order to get it in the 10-hour mark. But I liked, you know, the reasoning behind Picard quitting Starfleet, you know. It's not the first time Picard's stood up against Starfleet. I mean, he did it in Star Trek Nemesis. Star Trek Insurrection. He gave up and was going to fight with the Baku. He's done this before. You know, he stood up to admirals. He stood up to Starfleet Command. You know, he defended Data in The Measure of a Man. Like, he has no problem standing up to Starfleet. So the fact that he, you know, quit and was living at his vineyard, it actually made sense to me. And I actually kind of liked that because, I mean, realistically, in real life, you know, I mean, it's been, you know, 18 years since we last saw Picard in Star Trek Nemesis. You know, 18 years ago, I was a very different person. You know, I was working a different job. I had, you know, some different friends that I used to hang out with, that sort of thing. I used to have a different lifestyle. You know, so to me, it makes sense that Picard would change in 18 years and not be the exact person he was when we last saw him. So I kind of like that. To me, it kind of made it a little bit more real. I love the cameos. I loved seeing Brent Spiner as Data. I loved, you know, Troy and Riker, or the Rikers, I should say, because they are married. People seem to forget that for some reason. I thought it was wonderful. You know, I especially just that scene of Picard and Riker, you know, sitting on the dock. You know, Riker's got his arm around his good buddy, and they're, you know, reminiscing about things. I loved that. I thought it was fantastic. I like that this wasn't a prequel. I think one of the mistakes that Discovery made, and Enterprise, to be honest with you, was they went the prequel route. Because as soon as you go prequel, you open yourself up to continuity issues. And you know, I like that this takes place after. Patrick Stewart's acting is on point when he's allowed to by the writers to shine. You know, he has some great Picard speeches in this show, and Patrick Stewart's an amazing actor. Like, he's a Shakespearean trained actor, and I like it when he's allowed to, you know, show his acting chops. More recently, I like that Sutra, the evil android. She was all kinds of sexy, I thought. Unfortunately, she got, you know, relegated to nothing in the
trash heap.
Yeah. Let's see. I got a lot. Oh, yeah. And another pro is I loved all the Easter eggs that they had on the show. You know, Quark was mentioned in episode 5. The USS Voyager was mentioned, obviously, because of 7 of 9. And it was nice seeing 7 of 9, even though she was a little bit different than I remember. But again, I mean, this has been, you know, the Voyager finale was 2001, so, I mean, this is almost 20 years. But, yeah, I love the Easter eggs. I love the, you know, like on that Vegas planet or whatever, they showed, you know, Mr. Mott, you know, apparently he owns a bunch of barber shops, so I thought that was kind of cool. All right, so okay. How about, do you guys have any pros that you guys wanted to throw out there?
I've got a pros.
Okay, let's do pros and then we'll roll into cons. Let's divide it up like that. So Rich, go ahead with your pros.
So, probably similar to yours. Also, I gave it a 2 on my personal scale out of 5. I didn't really have any emotional noticement until Troy and Riker came on screen. As soon as I saw Riker in the kitchen, I got that little smile. I'm like, hey, I like this a little bit. Even when Picard had said, you know, engage on the bridge of the La Sorrenta, it didn't hit me at home. You know, when I watched TNG from when I was a kid, it gives you a little tingle. You're like, oh yeah, that means we're going somewhere. I saw it and it just didn't feel it, but I saw Troy and Picard, or Troy and Riker, and I thought that was fantastic. 7 of 9 was nice to see as well, and a couple of those Easter eggs you talked about. And it's always good to see Data. One of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek is Brent Spiner's Data, and for better or for worse, Aldous Soon, I can't pronounce the name properly, but anyway, all of those iterations, and we've got Noonien and Arik and now Indigo. I like all those characters, so I'd have to say. And you're right, Soji, Dodge, Sutra, all kinds of pretty, definitely.
Excellent. Kev, did you have anything you wanted to throw on the pros list?
I do. Okay, that's seconding, but thirding Soji, Dodge. What kills me is for her to show differences between each character and the acting talent it takes to do that will never be recognized in the science fiction show, unfortunately.
That is
true.
It
kills me. I'm sure we all have long lists of actors and actresses that were on a genre show and were killing it with their work, but would never, ever be recognized with an Oscar or an Emmy or, you know, any great acting award, despite the fact that they're probably doing a better job than, you know, quote, mainstream shows.
Yeah.
Sorry. And she was fantastic. Like, I love acting like that, to just do subtle, you know, it almost goes back to your Christopher Reeve, you know, my Clark Kent or Superman. Yeah, to show differences in the characters.
That, and I compare her to Tatiana Maslany with the Orphan Black TV series, where she played, like, multiple different clones.
Yes.
And each one of them was distinctive and different. She, and this actress, I can't remember her name. But, she did a phenomenal job as Dodge and Sutra and Soji and...
And this is why there should be, like, a geek award show, because she'll never be nominated otherwise for great work. When you boil down the essence of what the whole season was, mm-hmm. I like that it continues the Star Trek idea of shining a mirror from the future on a present-day situation. Mm-hmm. And that's a legacy going all the way back to the original series. And overall, there's a very good point being made here. In execution, you know, there's some trips and some stumbles, to say the least. But it sounds like we're splitting pros and cons here.
Well,
but the overall idea is great, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, like the main one that they were going for, obviously, was the refugees. Like, you know, because, I mean, that is a situation where we, you know, have we're taking in all these refugees, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of negativity addressed towards them. And you kind of saw that even in the first episode of Picard, like when they're talking about the Romulans, and that reporter was, you know, trying to say Romulan lives, and Picard said, no lives, you know. Like, I definitely know what they were trying to go for here, but it just, yeah, the execution wasn't quite on point.
I think we even have a real-world mirror there in that leaders were supposed to lead a group of people, you know, together, whereas now you have leaders that are more concerned about their own ego and their friends and, you know, the ones close to them financially or, you know, power-wise or for whatever reason, and screw the common people. And I think anytime you showed people further up the ladder, you were seeing that, no, I'm worried about me. I'm not worried about the greater good. Well, it didn't used to be that way, and maybe it needs to be again.
Yeah.
I kind of have to disagree on some of that. Just for me, I would have to disagree on like the accolades you put on the actress playing Soji and Daj. Like, there was some differences, and it was all right. I mean, I personally wouldn't give it like an Emmy. I found that Sutra was a little bit kind of wooden to from my point of view. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of my opinion. And then going along with, like, you know, the sort of the political implications in the show, I find that it's always going to be super one-sided, and it's very much so in recent Star Trek, very much one-sided on a very specific leaning, politically speaking. And I just, if I try to recall correctly, there was more of a balance in older Trek of like just an overview as opposed to deciding what is right and wrong and what people may or may not think, or like an opinion that may or may not be correct, that's kind of pushed into it.
Well, it
could be wrong, but that's kind of my view.
No, I totally see where you're coming from, Richard. Like, you know, I'll use a TOS for an example. There was an episode, I believe it was called A Private Little War, and where there's this primitive planet and the Klingons are basically arming one side of a conflict, and then Kirk and them go in there, and they think they might, I can't remember how it ends, but Kirk is debating about arming the other side to equal things up, you know, which is, you know, very at the time it was kind of like a their take on Vietnam, right? And in that episode you actually see Dr. McCoy arguing with Kirk about it, telling him that, you know, he was wrong, but at the same time he wasn't completely wrong either. So like they would have the debate on, like, both sides were represented, right? Back in the day, where you would have that debate,
right?
Whereas on modern Trek it seems like Alex Kurtzman and the writers of modern Trek insert their politics, and that's the only way. Like, that's the way that you need to think.
That's basically it. It's just that they kind of already, if I recall correctly, they've basically stated that, you know, in social media and like public news and stuff, that they're against certain things, certain people, and they're going to push that, you know, that political view. And I just, like, I personally don't agree with that. Like, show a balance, show both sides, let everybody decide what they want from it.
Yeah.
And take it from there.
Yeah, exactly. But Kevin, did you have any more pros on your list?
No, because the point I want to make would work better to flow out of the con into it.
Okay, well, let's move on into the cons then. And again, like I said, my list is quite extensive, unfortunately.
Yeah, mine too.
So yeah, if you guys,
I only got two. So
if I say anything that you guys agree with or you want to comment on, by all means, jump in. Just feel free. First up, lens flares. They are following the J.J. Abrams school of lens flares, and it drives me freaking bananas, man. Like, and Kevin and I have talked about this before. Like, if it's a real lens flare, like if it is, you know, like they're on a planet or whatever, and the sun does shine, and it would make a lens flare in the camera, fine. You know, if it's real. But lens, it just seems like with J.J. and with Alex Kurtzman, Star Trek, like Discovery, it just seems like there's lens flares everywhere where they're not really needed, or they wouldn't be. Like, to me, it just...
seems like an easy way to cover up camera and CGI issues.
Yes, exactly. And I really think that's what they're doing. Because in these, you know, these iterations of Star Trek, the modern Star Trek, there is a lot of CGI. You know, like, a lot of sets aren't even created anymore. Like, the whatever Rios' ship's called, it's all CGI, pretty much. Like, it, you know, they're just standing in front of a green screen. Like, they have a few chairs there or whatever, but everything else, it's all fake.
It's like a green room, essentially.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're obviously doing that to save money and so on and so forth, but the lens flares just take me out of it.
Honestly, about the lens flares, I never really noticed, so I can't comment too much about lens flares, but I can see where you're coming from. Unfortunately, say, like, Data's quote-unquote makeup or CGI was really noticeable, so there's that, too.
Yeah.
But that's age. If the lens flares are, like, hearing someone chew, you might not notice it for 100 times, but the one time you notice it, now you can't notice anything else.
I know. Like, that's the thing. Like, once I notice it, then I'm noticing it for the rest of the episode. You know, like, and it's, you know, if I can get through not noticing it, it's not so bad. I really didn't like how the show tends to make Picard look like old and naive and stupid at times. Like, you know, he deserves more respect than I feel sometimes he got on this show. You know, like, for example, I'll talk about, just briefly, about the finale, when he, using air quotes, dies. Even before that, it was episode 9, when, what's her name, Raffi, tells Picard that she loves him, right? And I understand it's like a friend love. It's not like she's saying, you know, I'm in love with you or anything. It's like, no, you're my buddy.
Platonic.
I love you. But the whole show, she's like shitting on Picard. You know, she's like in a drunken mess. Like, she blames him for what happened to her career. You know, she's all pissed off when her son won't, you know, accept her back into his life. And she, I don't know, to me, I always felt like she kind of shit on Picard. And then episode 9, it's like, oh, I loved you. I love you, you know, you're my good friend. And it's like, yeah, but you shat on him so much. Like,
I have to agree with that. Raffi's character just didn't really stand out to me, and I felt that it was a kind of a fake ploy to throw in the whole thing about her son and you know, the son's wife and things like that. Like, just to try to force an emotional attachment that just wasn't really there for me. That's my opinion about that.
Well, my opinion about her character is, I think she was, it's a political thing on Kurtzman's part. You know, he has to have, you know, a person, a minority, a female, and she has to have an issue. You know, it's like we have to have that representation on the show. Like, and I'm not against, you know, having female characters. I'm not against having people of color. You know, I'm not against having, you know, someone to have personal issues. But to have one character, you know, embodying all this political stuff, all these requirements, and then having them crap on Picard for, you know, three quarters of the show. Like, I don't get it. I don't like it. You know, one character I really did like is Brios, and I really did like, you know, the few scenes that him and Picard had together. There was a respect there, you know, especially, like, when they first met, and Picard, you know, basically calls him out, like, you know, you are Starfleet, like, you know, like, the way you keep your ship, the way you are, like, you're Starfleet at your heart, just like me, you know, and there was a lot of respect shown by Rios. I don't recall him ever kind of crapping on Picard, other than, you know, like, hanging up on him and stuff, you know, here and there, but, you know, again...
Yeah,
he has to have his issues too, because we got to have that politics here. You know, he has to be the character that's suffering from PTSD. You know, like we can't just have you know a Geordi character that's, you know, happy go lucky, right? We have to have somebody with baggage for some reason.
It mirrors real life in a lot of ways. But you're right, Rios in general. The dude actually killed it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All of his personalities for the holograms. That was awesome. I love that. Like, it was just, and he did most of the accents, like, pretty spot on. And yeah, like that does take some skill. I'm gonna give, like, those accolades, I'm gonna give those to Rios in that one, because he did a good job.
Yes. He was definitely a pro for the series. And yeah, like that scene where Raffi's on the holodeck and she's trying to get the information out of all the holograms, it was borderline goofy, but I liked it. I thought it worked very well.
Yeah, a little bit of humor in there. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right, getting back to the cons. I really don't like the look of warp speed. I miss the old look. Like, when you would see the Enterprise flying past the camera, you would see the stars, you know, streaking as they went by. I like that look. You know, like, that is, you know, because on this show, everything's CGI. There's no models made. It's completely computer-generated special effects. So back in the day when they did Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager... and even Enterprise, to an extent. Warp speed looked the way it did because that was an actual model that actually was built, and it would actually pass a camera, and then they would put in the star field afterwards where you would see the stars streaking past. I like that look. I think, to me, that's Star Trek. This whole, you know, swirling... warp speed look, it really reminds me of being on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon. You know, that to me, that looks like them traveling through hyperspace, not space. And I don't know. I really miss the old warp speed look, which they still do on the Orville, ironically. The non-Star Trek show, they actually looks more like Star Trek, in my opinion.
Right, yeah. I can agree with that.
So, this is coming from...
Oh, sorry, there's Kevin, nothing wrong with keeping... Sorry, there's nothing wrong with Star Trek looking like Star Trek. And what you can just tell that the people making the show are going for, well, we have the technology to do this, and we can do this, and make this look pretty cool, great, do it
on other shows. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, keep Star Trek, Star Trek. There's a reason why the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park still look great decades later. And it's not because of today's CGI technology that they look great then. There's a reason why the Star Trek warp just looks Star Trek and looks fun and looks, you know, like a tether throughout all of the versions until now, you know.
Well, to use another analogy, the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the reason why the turtles look so good is because those costumes were designed by Jim Henson. And then you look at the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies and they're all CGI. They don't even look like turtles. But anyway, we're talking Star Trek, sorry. For going on a tangent there.
We are. Can we talk about Dejad Vash for a second?
Yes,
go ahead. Because the Javash makes me salty. Is there anywhere else where the Javash is mentioned in Star Trek?
Is that the secret organization thing?
Well, that's the uber secret organization above the Tal Shiar.
Yeah, they're the ones that the Tal Shiar is afraid of.
Right. But was there ever any mention of it? And
what's
wrong with just using the Tal Shiar? Why do we need an all new organization out of nowhere that's always been there? Well, to be fair, like if we're gonna have a balance, we kind of did do that with Section 31, but there's only one Section 31. There's not like a Section 76 above that. You know what I mean? Every single superpower has their own secret service, but the Javash just seems like it was like the end of the show. It was rushed and it wasn't completely thought out, you know. And then they went in with this whole admonition thing, and they kind of went back and retconned it poorly, I think, and just. I don't like the Javash. I don't like the idea. It could have just been Tal Shiar. It would have been fine.
Yeah,
question.
Go ahead.
The Tal Shiar, have they been defeated? Have they been defeated or exposed or say, used too much that they don't come across as a threat anymore? Like, eventually, if your super secret group gets defeated X amount of times, then they don't seem super or secret anymore.
Everybody will always be afraid of the Tal Shiar. Though the Tal Shiar and the Obsidian Order took a massive, massive defeat during Deep Space Nine before the Dominion Wars, the Tal Shiar recovered more or less. Obsidian Order did not recover. The Obsidian Order lost all of its sort of clout, as it were. But the Shiar was always an organization that you did not fuck with, ever.
Yeah, and they did suffer some defeat there, but I mean they were still there towards the end of the, because in season 7 of Deep Space Nine they did that whole episode with Dr. Bashir on Romulus, and the Tal Shiar was behind that.
There you go. That just kind of speaks to that point.
Yeah, they've been around and they're definitely a formidable opponent. But yeah, the not just the Javash, but the that other group, the one that Elnor was part of, where they're
the Sisters of Orthodoxy or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I can't remember, but like I'm all for
that's the same thing for me, like.
Well, that
just throwing in there just to have it.
Yeah, because now they're the enemies of the Javash, right? Like those warrior nuns. And then when we did see the Javash, when they did that flashback scene, they're all women. I mean, I'm not anti-woman. I'm not. But why do we have to have all these, you know, just strictly women in power secret organizations? Like, to me, that's just silly. I don't know.
Well, for so many years it was always about, you know, it's always men, right? So
yeah,
I guess it's just their turn,
I guess. But to me, it I just feel like Kurtzman and them guys are just beating us over the head with it, you know.
I agree that there's definitely some room for other people, and I'm okay with that. We have many strong female characters all through sci-fi, characters of color, characters of minorities. We have Harry Kim, he's Korean, I think. Mm-hmm. Avery Brooks, he's a black man, you know. Captain Janeway, 7 of 9, B'Elanna Torres, I can go on and on.
Yep.
We already have strong female characters of minority. But I feel like lately it has been sort of a pushed narrative that it has to be all about that. And that's part of what destroyed Star Wars, not to digress, but it's kind of reflecting in Star Trek, where you don't need to force it, because as far as I know, most people and people I've met, they're pretty accepting of just about everything.
Yep.
And we don't need to have it forced, you know?
Well, the thing is, we're creating, to use the phrase Mary Sue's, like we've gone too far in in pop culture with these Mary Sue characters. And what a Mary Sue is, from a, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a female character that is near perfect, where she says the right things, she does the right things, she's always right, and she's basically the hero at the end of the day. You know, like Star Trek Discovery, like Michael Burnham can literally commit mutiny, and yet at the end of the day, she's the one that's saving the universe all the time. You know, it's like she always comes up with the solutions. Like that drives me nuts as a fan of Star Trek, because I'll use TNG for example. Like Data was a character that could do like a million calculations per second. He can type faster than anyone. He's got super strength. He's got all these amazing qualities that would make, he could really, at the end of the day, he could probably run the Enterprise by himself because he's that good. But he doesn't, right? He's part of a crew. He's part of a group that work together.
Part of a team.
Yes. Whereas, like, Michael Burnham, I know Kurtzman was, Star Trek's never had a strong female lead, and we're providing that. And I'm like thinking to myself, what are you talking about? Back in 1995, Captain Janeway was introduced, and she was a very strong female lead character. And the captain, anyway, again, we're getting into the political agendas that are seeping in to modern Star Trek, unfortunately. Another thing that was a con, this was, of course, in Episode 9, androids can mind meld, apparently.
Okay, so I do have an opinion on this one as soon as you're done.
Yeah, to me, like, the way I understand mind melding is Vulcans are telepathic, right? Like, but they're, unlike the Betazoids that can, Troy can look at her mom and they can exchange thoughts back and forth without... sometimes not even being in the same room. They can just be in the same vicinity, right?
Or across the screen.
Yeah, exactly. But with Vulcans, their telepathy is through touch, right? Like Mr. Spock can communicate things to you, but he needs to touch you. That's why they get into the mind meld, because, it isn't something that is just passive. Like, he needs to concentrate. He needs to look into your eyes. He needs to, move that information, right? So to me, it's not like, learning to play the guitar, where anyone can buy, an instruction manual and just pick up a guitar and start teaching themselves. It's something that's specific to Vulcans because they are telepathically capable through their touch. I really don't think an android can learn that. And I know people pointed out, there's the episode of the original series where Spock mind melds with Nomad, but that's Spock mind melding with something. It's not
that has a conscious mind.
Yes. So anyway,
Nomad had a conscious mind. Sorry, V'ger has a conscious mind.
Yeah.
The Fire Lava entity had a conscious mind that Spock was able to meld with because he was initiating it. He's the Vulcan, albeit half Vulcan. And I know that there's a lot of talk about this. The way they worded it is sort of the biggest problem for me, is that, like you said, you can't just pick up a manual and flip through and be like, boom, I can mind meld. It doesn't work that way. And this is one thing that I'm going to be a super stickler about, is that it's not possible for an android to do it like that. Mm-hmm. If they had said something else, like if they had said in part of the cloning process, they introduced Vulcan DNA and she was able to learn how to mind meld that way, that would make it a lot more believable than, hey, I'm just going to learn how to mind meld as an android. My computer can't learn how to mind meld. Mm-hmm. What? I don't understand why it's possible for that character to mind meld. So that's my gripe about it.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is. You know what I mean? So I'm going to move on from that. It is what it is. But I can't accept that androids can mind meld as lore. That's just not a thing.
Yeah. Another con on my list is the swearing, curse words. swearing for the sake of swearing. Like, that's not Star Trek. You did not hear people, telling other people to shut the fuck up. That did not happen. You know, like, I know what happened in Discovery, because they had that whole scene in engineering where Stamets and Tilly were saying fuck and fuck, 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 and they're, laughing like a couple of schoolgirls saying fuck. That's not Star Trek. Like, yes, I realize, Captain Kirk said double dumbass on you, on Star Trek 4. Data said, oh shit, on Star Trek Generations.
Those are really lighthearted and sort of basic, barely
done for laughs. But this swearing, I was telling Kevin on a previous episode, the head of Starfleet Command is swearing at Picard. That just blows my mind. Like, she's the top of the food chain in Starfleet Command, and she's swearing at one of the most decorated Starfleet officers in history. To me, I guess it was episode 2. That took me right out of it. I'm like, say what you will about Captain Jellico. He was probably like one of the biggest dicks that you ever saw on Star Trek, but in a good way. He would never do that.
Yeah, he was a great captain.
Yeah, a lot of people hate on him, but I mean, he was right. He stopped a Cardassian invasion. He saved Picard. Everyone shits on him. Oh, he's such an asshole. It's like, that's what they needed at the time. They needed that for that mission. And yeah, I agree. I would have loved to have seen him as the head of Starfleet Command, but without the swearing.
Yes, and I'm going to jump in here because I also have an opinion about that specifically. I don't remember the Admiral's name, but I don't even think that she was actually... To me, she wasn't really acting. She was just being a bitch, to be completely honest. She was being aggressive and angry and rude, and I didn't care for that, especially when you're talking to Captain... Admiral Jean-Luc Picard, like you said, mm-hmm. one of the most decorated officers in all of Starfleet. He was the captain of two flagships of Starfleet. He had saved the galaxy probably a few times. Mm-hmm. He survived the Borg. Okay, he did all these things, and you're literally talking to him like he is a Vulcan traitor. And the phrase she used, and I quote, the sheer fucking hubris, end quote, mm-hmm. to me, is about the actual writers of Star Trek. Their hubris, in my opinion, is what's sort of going to be their downfall. Because they're creating this sloppy mess that's a bit of a dumpster fire. And Picard being one of the most prolific figures in Starfleet history. And they just treat him like a pitsock, to be completely honest. And it just the contrivances are just that bothers me a lot, because the head of Starfleet Command is supposed to show some dignity, some respect, and here she is just verbally slapping Picard in the face, and that just goes back to the whole thing about how this show kind of shits on Picard almost all the way through, and I don't like that.
No, me either.
No, man, it's my opinion. I could be wrong, and I know that we're a bit older, and we have, kind of purist ideas about Star Trek, but that got to me a lot, actually.
Well, I think part of it, too, is, with us, with our generation, we were all always taught to respect our elders, and especially respect, people that, accomplished great things, our veterans and doctors and people, people like that, people that were pillars of our community. We were always taught to respect. And Picard is one of those pillars of the Starfleet community, of the Federation community. And the head of Starfleet not showing him any respect, it's mind-boggling. But I'll add to this. Part of the problem is, and this is a problem not just with Star Trek, but it's also a problem with most recently the new Star Wars film, The Rise of Skywalker. With Star Trek Picard, they actually released a novel, which I own, but I haven't actually had a chance to read it yet, which basically sets up the backstory of the series, where, like, Admiral Clancy, that's the head of Starfleet Command, there's a reason why she hates Picard, and it's explained in the book. And that is a problem. When, like, you should be able to, you know, through a few lines of dialogue here and there, through, you know, interactions, through a well-written script, you should be able to know exactly why Clancy doesn't like Picard. You shouldn't have You shouldn't have to read a book to know, you know. And that was like the rise.
A little bit of exposition goes a long way.
Exactly. Like, it's like the Rise of Skywalker. Like, I bring that up because the Rise of Skywalker just came up with they came out with their novelization where they clear up a lot of the unanswered questions in the movie, like what was Finn trying to say to Rey? How is Palpatine a clone or not? You know, and all these things are answered in the book, but they shouldn't be. You shouldn't have to do a novel to explain what's going on in your show. Your show should be able to explain itself.
Jumping in.
So go ahead.
There's also a preview comic too of Picard. So now you get two things you'd have to read in addition to the show.
Well,
the best example I can give for a book helping is Kingdom Come, DC Comics, Alex Ross painted series.
Yeah.
There is also a book for it. And the book acts as a great complement to it. I can read Kingdom Come, get the whole story, beginning, middle, and end, and understand everything. I can also get this book that will expand on certain things between the panels, between the pages, and give me a little more depth to enjoy it more fully. But they are both complete on their own, and they complement each other together. But there's stuff, like you're saying, for the book that is needed to understand the show, and the show is like half done for these scenes because it's not bringing in this information with it.
Yeah.
Or doing exposition or showing anything.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be asking your viewers who are already paying for this extra streaming service to watch this show to now go spend $20 on a book to fully understand the whole story.
Yeah,
however much on the comic too.
To understand the motivations of some of the characters, like we don't know why Clancy hates Picard. You know, we just think she's a bitch, but there's a reason, but it's not explained on the show. But I did want to comment on the comic book because I did read that, and I will say that they actually did a good job with that because they didn't. The only thing that the comic book really introduced was the idea of relocating Romulans because the supernova was coming. So you got to see Picard on his new ship and Raffi as his first officer. But it also introduced the caretaker characters, like the two Romulans that are chilling at the vineyard helping Picard. It introduces those characters because as Tal Shiar officers. And then Picard basically they help Picard against the Tal Shiar in the comic book series. And then because now they're ostracized by their people, Picard says, hey, you know, like, I got a vineyard if you guys want to, you know, go there. I got a safe place for you. And the comic book actually was nice because it's not required reading. You know, like, we didn't really need to know the backstories of those two characters. We just know that they're Romulans and they help Picard. That's all we really need to know.
We're going to jump in real quick here. I had a couple of points. First one, I just want to... Last thing I want to say about the excessive swearing and the excessive gore.
Oh,
the gore. It's not brave. It's not stunning. It's weak and derivative, and it's lazy. A little bit of gore? Hell yeah, I'm about that. I love horror movies. But it went overboard. It was excessive. They completely, completely shat on the character of Icheb, which they could have done a lot with.
Yeah.
Icheb could have been amazing. Because to me, Star Trek is meant to be, it's meant to be better. It's meant to show something better of our future. Mm-hmm. I know that there's going to be gory stuff. People are going to die. But in a show like this, for us, for fans in general, it's just kind of weak. It's lazy. And the creators, to me, seem really arrogant, and they don't really realize that. And people are going to shame us for having opinions like this, and that's okay. Like, we're going to get hate one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And another thing about the Romulan caretakers, I would have liked, again, just the tiniest bit of exposition, because they show up with these magic gizmos, you know, the magic McMuffins, and they're like, whoa, this is exactly what happened in this apartment. Here's a holographic representation.
Yeah.
Where did they get that? When was it said that they were former members of Tel Shiar before this happened? A little bit of exposition would have been nice there.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Yes, I just want to piggyback on what you were saying there, Rich, about the gore. And people have pointed out, like, there was, I've talked about this before, you know, on Next Generation Season 1, the episode Conspiracy, where you saw Commander Remick, his head blows up, you know, with the episode with all the bugs and everything. I mean, there has been gore, but to me, the Egypt thing was a little bit different. It really felt like an episode, or it felt like I was watching Saw, or the movie Hostel, you know, like this torture of this character, and the doctor, whatever she was, you know, her, you know, calling him little buddy, and kind of seemingly taking pleasure in it, that really took me out of it. And the thing is, I'm not naive. Like, I know bad things have happened on Star Trek, but a lot of it happens off screen. You know, aside from the Commander Remick example, or those, like in season two when they did that episode with the deaf guy, and he has those three assistants, and then they get, you know, killed, and you see them get vaporized. It's pretty graphic. Like, you actually see the layers of skin get melted away till they disappear. Like, it's a graphic visual. That being said, those were very rare, and those were exceptions. For example, Deep Space Nine. You know, prior to Deep Space Nine, we know that the Cardassians occupied Bajor. Like, basically, the Bajorans were an allegory for the Jews, and the Cardassians were an allegory for the Nazis. And what happened? The occupation of Bajor was you know, World War II. It was a concentration camps scenario, right?
Right.
So we know terrible things happened. Like, we've heard Kira talk about it. We've heard Odo talk about it. We've heard, you know, Saad Duqat, you know, and Dumar, you know, almost like revel in remembering the good old days, as, you know, as Nazis probably did after the war.
The prefects.
Yeah. So, but we didn't see it. You know, like, they would reference it, like for example, Chief O'Brien, like the massacre the Setlik 3 massacre. You know,
right.
where we find out that Chief O'Brien had to kill a Cardassian, right? And that he saw, you know, women and children murdered. Like, we didn't see it, you know, like, but we saw the effects. We saw through Cole Meany's acting. We saw how that affected him. We saw, you know, through Nana Visitor, as through her acting as Major Kira, we saw the effects of the occupation, and how, you know, the good writing of those characters, how it affected them. Like, we didn't need to see flashbacks where we saw gore and murder. We just know it happened, and we know that it was terrible based on their recollections, through their acting, through the writing of the scripts.
And I'd like to say that exposition, the telling of those stories is so powerful. Listening to that and the way they portray it, you can feel it. Mm-hmm. When you see something like that happen to Egypt, it's just like you said, it takes you out of it. You know, it's hard to suspend your disbelief. It would have been a little bit easier, maybe if they just talked about it, kind of thing.
Yes. Well, like I said, like if the people that make Star Trek now, if they had made that episode where you like, and it was TNG, it was an episode I believe was called The Wounded, where you saw Chief O'Brien, like when we first met the Cardassians, they came on the Enterprise, and then he's sitting at the bar with the one Cardassian, and the one Cardassian doesn't understand why O'Brien doesn't like him, right? And then he tells the story about how he had to how he had to kill a Cardassian. And he turns to him and says, "I don't hate you, Cardassian. I hate what your people made me become." Like that's powerful. That's right. If that was done today,
that's going to hit you harder than anything else.
Exactly. But like if that was done today by Alex Kurtzman and these producers and stuff, you would have saw O'Brien. They would have done a flashback scene where you would have saw O'Brien kill somebody. But you don't need to do that. You know, what the effect that it had on him was conveyed through the writing and the acting. But it's lazy writing. It really is. All right, so... sorry, go ahead, Rich.
I just want to throw in another pro that I just remembered.
Okay.
Seeing Hugh was really nice. I liked the character of Hugh.
Yep.
And I like what he did. He had a couple of good episodes, but I just want to go as an overall view. Most of these nice scenes, you know, the fan service ones, mm-hmm. I think that it's more or less an attempt to try and distract from, you know, the show itself, because the show has a litany of characters that are just hollow shells of what they could have been. They're very vapid, hollow characters, and I don't even think that the show Picard is even really about Picard. He's just sort of a prop to, like, lure fans in. It's really about everything else going on. I don't really think it has much to do with Picard at all.
No, he's really just a special guest star. Like, really.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, exactly. I think there's episodes of TNG where Guinan had more to do than Picard did in some of these episodes. But yeah, like you said, Hugh, it was nice seeing him, definitely. But one of the things I heard, I don't know if this is true, one of the reasons why, like, the Riker episode, where he goes to their house and stuff, kind of seems out of place, is because they kind of shoehorned it in. They're like, we got to do something. Like, we got, you know, like they really shoehorned it in, and I really feel like they were doing this, and then they sat back and were like, oh, shit, you know, like, we got to, like, bring some TNG people in or something, because this is, you know, what we're doing so far is not that great. We need to bump this up a little bit. I have a few more cons here. Dodge. As much as I like that character, it kind of annoyed me how she would conveniently remember things when needed. Like whenever the plot or the story needed her to remember something, she would remember it. And, oh yeah, you know, like my people are on this planet. Oh yeah, my people, you know, there's these transwarp conduits. That's how we get there fast. Oh yeah, you know, like it just seemed too convenient that she kept remembering things.
To be fair, plot holes have been a big part of basically anything that we've ever watched and done. I get it.
Yep.
But kind of like the Solo movie, when the entire show is based on plot armor, where's the rest of the plot? Where's the script? Right? What are we watching here? that's my thoughts on it.
Yep. Another con I have is the surprise guest stars being listed in the opening credits. So, like, the episode where Seven of Nine shows up right at the last, you know, 10 seconds, she's listed in the opening credits. Episode 9, Brent Spiner is listed as a special guest star. So, you know, we hadn't seen him since that first episode where he was in the visions as Data. So when he was listed in the opening credits, I was thinking to myself, oh, I guess Data's in this episode? You know, but when he comes out as Alton Soon or whatever, it was, you know, I don't know. I kind of...
Predictable.
It was, like, I knew he was going to be in the episode. Like, it was a surprise that he wasn't playing Data. He was playing another character, which I appreciated. But, you know, it would have been a bigger surprise if they would have listed him in the end credits.
I agree. And just one quick point about plot holes, the Magic McMuffin Fixer tool.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what's that about? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Just to give them a way to get back up into space.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even got to the final episode yet. That is on my list for sure. Another thing, my last con. Agnes Girardi there, she straight up murdered Bruce Maddox.
100%. Cold-blooded killer.
Like, I mean, the writers could have wrote it that, you know, Commodore O, when she was doing the mind meld, maybe planted a command into her brain that she had to murder him, and she had no choice. But they didn't. She just straight up decided to kill him because of what she saw, right? And then by episode 9, it seems like all's forgiven. Like, she's just, part of the crew, you know? And, you know...
And the sad part is, Maddox could have been... awesome. I liked Maddox in Measure of a Man. It wasn't the same actor, but the character himself, he's brilliant, and he could have been a really good foil for, say, you know, Indigo soon. Could have been a good character, again, just like Icheb, but they just decided to push him out an airlock.
Well, and honestly, like, I really wish they would have brought the original actor back. But I don't know the specifics. I might be just talking out of my ass here, but I suspect they probably told him, yeah, you're gonna come back for an episode, then we're gonna kill you. And then he was like, no thanks, I don't need to be murdered on your show. That's stupid. You know, I'm thinking that's why they had to recast the actor, because he probably was like, why? Like, if you're gonna bring me back, bring me back.
Speaking of actors like that, as far as I know, there was some drama regarding the character that played Icheb. His name is Manu Treani, I think, something like that.
Okay.
And I think, if I recall correctly, he would have liked to have been in the episode, and he would have liked to have been the one to send his character off, because he put a lot of work into that character. Like, he was Icheb. Like, he was important in the show, and... They did not even give him the respect of casting him as his own character.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. Because to be honest, I didn't even know who that was until Seven says his name. I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay. All right. So let's get into discussing the final episode.
The two-parter or the 10th one?
Well,
because I see it as one long episode.
Episode 9, if you want to talk about that. I kind of threw some stuff out there already about episode 9, but we could talk to them as one big story. This is stuff I wrote down as I was watching the episode. So by all means, you know, jump in and add to anything, and then if you guys have anything more to add, by all means. And I should have thrown this on the pros list. I liked seeing that doctor from the Stargazer. You know, like, we never in the TNG, aside from, you know, the flashbacks of Jack Crusher, we never saw anyone from the Stargazer. And I liked the fact that, you know, Picard's doctor in episode 2 or whatever was the Stargazer doctor. And I like the fact that they're still friends and they still talk. I thought that was really
cool. You know what? I agree. That was a really good Easter egg. Not really an Easter egg, but sort of a gentle throwback. Like, hey, we haven't forgotten that the Stargazer was a thing.
Yeah.
So I can agree with that.
So the episode 9 and 10, they felt very rushed. You know, like, you know, it took, like, 4 episodes to get Picard into space, and then it just seemed like everything got rushed towards the end. Like it was very frustrating. Okay, so Rich had mentioned this. The magic hand machine. provided by Saga last episode, fixes Rio's ship through the power of imagination.
Again, there's some plot armor there that they needed so they could get back up into space to do their spacey whimy timey whimy stuff, to quote Doctor Who.
But they didn't even need to do that. Like, they could have just had and of course the space flowers. I gotta mention that, the space orchids. The space orchids brought them down, but they could have just wrote it that they got their power back once they got, you know, like, you didn't need that magic handheld, you know, sonic screwdriver machine. Like, it was goofy.
They gotta have a McMuffin.
Yes, exactly. The Cersei Lannister, Romulan sister. So episode 8, when all the Borg were, like, you know, piling on her there, you know, it to me it looked like she beamed away. And then
I thought so too.
So I assumed she beamed to the Romulan fleet, because as soon as that happened and she seemed to beam away, that's when the Romulan fleet took off from the cube. So I assumed she was just with them. But then in episode 10, it turns out, oh, guess what? She's been on the cube all this time. And
not doing anything?
Yeah. And then one of her lines to her brother is, like, have you fucked any of them? Like, referencing the androids, because he's talking about having come from their town or village or whatever. And that's what she says to him. Like, it's creepy. Like, honestly, when she walked up to him, I really thought they were going to kiss. I really thought.
Yeah, that whole incestuous vibe between the two of them. I mean, Narek in general, I thought, was a vapid, annoying, trash character. They really took away from what we viewed as the value of Romulans and what a great... I think they're a great race. I love Romulans, Vulcans, Proto-Vulcans, and they just basically made them... what we kind of define as, like, millennial kids of today.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, they're Romulans from the 25th century. We need a little bit more. There's complete, I find it to be, like, a lack of respect for Star Trek lore in general.
Yes. So I just want to go back and add a con, because we're talking about, you know, life and all that. One of the cons about this show was the absolute disrespect for life. You know, like, every episode someone is being murdered on the show. Like, I don't remember a Star Trek show where every episode you could count on somebody getting killed, whether it's, you know, Egypt, whether it's a Romulan senator getting his head cut off, whether it's Bruce Maddox being killed. Like, someone is getting murdered on every episode, and I don't understand it. Like, there's this, you know, Star Trek's always had this respect for life. Like, yes, characters died, characters were killed, but not like this, like, where it's just commonplace that people are getting murdered.
Usually it's red shirts that take the bullet, and that's been a trope for Star Trek, and I'm guilty of it, too. Like, you know, we're going to sacrifice the red shirts. That's cool. But say someone like Hugh, for example, you know, he was in a couple of really, really good episodes in TNG, and he did some really good stuff in Picard, and he could have been a fantastic addition to that crew. Like, since the artifact went down, boom, you know, maybe they needed a science officer, something like that. They could have done so much more, but this Game of Thrones style of, like,
yes,
who's going to get murdered this week on blah, blah, blah show, and it's... I don't like it, and... It is my opinion. I may be unpopular, and I'm okay with that, but going back to the beginning, I wasn't looking for a TNG remake or anything like that. I was looking for something that added value to Star Trek, and from what I've seen of Discovery and so far with Picard, little to no value has been added to Star Trek as a whole, and that puts a, you know, to further the pun, if you will, puts a hole in my heart for Star Trek.
Yeah. But yeah, just the straight up lack of respect for life. Like, I just, ugh. So continuing with episode 10, Agnes was able to lie to the androids. Again, like, one of the problems with new Star Trek, is they're forgetting continuity. But in this instance, they're ignoring their own continuity. Like, it was established in Episode 9 that you can't lie to the androids, that they can tell when they're you're being deceptive. She straight up lies to them and says, yes, I'm on your side. I'm going to help you out. And then, I don't know, Dr. Soon leaves the room, and then she's like, fuck you, you know, or whatever. She drops an F-bomb. And it's like, what? Like, you know,
then predictably, she goes and busts out for Card. But why wouldn't they have a guard on his door, for one? They put a guard on Narek, and if anything, Picard can be, from their point of view, more dangerous because of the way he talks and convincing people of what he wants. It would have been more intelligent if they put a guard on Picard's door. Mm-hmm. But again, a little bit of plot armor just so Jurati could get in and bust him out and do her thing, right?
Well, and another thing, too, with going on the cons list is the language. You know, aside from the swearing, you know, I'm pretty sure someone said dude on this show. Like, I want to say Rio said dude, or maybe it was Agnes, but someone dropped dude. And in this episode, she drops the line, crypto kung fu. When do they talk like that on Star Trek? Like, it's, I don't know. It just takes me out of it whenever they try and insert, you know, 20 or 21st century lingo into the show. The whole Agnes thing really bothers me. That was one of the things, like, every time she's on screen now, I'm like, why is she not arrested? Why is she not in handcuffs? And then, you know, she uses that, you know, magic handheld machine to create, you know, duplicate ships with duplicate warp signatures. And she has that scene where she duplicates her face and you see her smiling face like 100 times on the bridge. It's like, oh my God, like, she's the worst. Like, every time I see her on screen now, it pisses me off. She's a murderer, and she needs to be treated accordingly.
So, as you said earlier in the show here, characters change after 20 years, and I'd like to think that as a longtime fan, you know, a bit of a purist, 400 years in the future, I would like to think that our just way of speaking has changed. You know, as a race, we've sort of almost evolved. We've kind of become better versions of ourselves. And like you said, in Star Trek, they never talk like that, and we never saw it. Even with TOS in the 60s, that was the 23rd century, and it was only a few hundred years on since Zefram Cochrane, and they didn't talk like that. It was not a thing, and it just sort of, again, it takes away from the value of Star Trek, in my opinion.
In this episode, you get Soji's flip-flopping loyalties, and other characters flip-flopping loyalties, like Soon, you know, like he was all for, you know, helping them summon the, you know, whatever, the synth gods or whatever, and that are going to come and annihilate all organic life. And then he sees the video of Sutra killing Saga, and then he just flips, you know. Like, to me, like, yes, you know, Sutra was manipulating him. Yes, she did kill Saga, but he was all in, and then all of a sudden flips. Same with Soji in this episode. Like, she's straight up trying to summon these, you know, super powerful ancient AIs to come down and kill everybody, and then she's like, because Picard gives an awesome speech about, hey, look, the Federation's here. They could have helped the Romulans, but they didn't. They're here for you. They're trying to save you. And then she just flips. Like, it's just flip-flopping of loyalties. It just drives me nuts. And it's very apparent on this last episode. Last episode, episode 9, you know, it seemed to take a little while to get to the synth village. You know, Dr. Soon tells them to get Picard some water because it's been a long journey for him to get there. Yet in this episode, Picard and Agnes just get back to the ship, no problem. It's like, boom, instantly. You know, he's apparently, and this is something I didn't understand, Patrick Stewart, the actor, is 79 years old, but Picard in this universe is 94. So that just, I don't know where the extra 15 years came from, but okay. I really don't see a 94-year-old man making a long trek very quickly. But in this episode, they needed them to be back to the ship for plot purposes. So, and then we had the space flowers again, which, in my opinion, are quite lame. Kind of goofy. The Picard maneuver 2.0 was pretty lame. I did, however, like Picard piloting the ship. This show seems to have forgotten that Picard was one of the best pilots in Starfleet, that Starfleet has ever had. That was established in TNG. Both him and Riker are known for their piloting skills. We saw it a couple times during the show, where Picard, you know, took the helm, because he was the best pilot on the ship. We saw in Chain of Command Part 2, Riker, you know, taking on that mission, because he was the best pilot on the ship. So to me, it was nice to see him back at the wheel, so to speak.
You know what? I'm going to jump in real quick. Just for me, I think that the Picard maneuver 2.0 was actually a little bit creative. I kind of dig that throwback, and I did really like seeing him in the command chair actually piloting.
Oh yeah.
And just like our parents, you know, with new technology, it's going to be a little bit rough. So that was sort of realistic in the way that he was like, I don't really know how to fly this ship, but I'm really good and I'm going to figure it out. And that's exactly what Picard would do. He's really good and he would figure it out.
Which I appreciate.
So yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Which I absolutely appreciated, but I can't remember. I think it was either episode 8 or 9 where he gets back, when he sits down in Rios's chair and tries piloting. And then he's like, oh, I don't actually know how to do this. And everyone snickers, you know, at the stupid old man, you know, like, it's like, no, Picard, like, that, to me, it's just lazy writing. Like, Picard would be able to figure it out, because he is that good.
Yeah.
Even though he's old, and yes, it's new technology.
Or he would already know, because that technology can't be that much different or that new, that he wouldn't already have a basic understanding of how to use it.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I did love seeing him pilot. Like, I thought that was great. And then, as the battle is about to begin, Commodore O, you know, she's now on the Romulan fleet somehow, very quickly. She has the line.
General Nardin or something.
Yeah, she has the line, "Ready planet sterilization number 5. And I'm like, man, that was lame. You know, "Ready planet sterilization number 5. Okay, what about numbers 1 through 4? What were those sterilizations? I was just waiting for her to say "execute plan 9 from outer space," because to me that line makes as much sense as you know, "ready planet sterilization number 5.
You know, I want to make a comment about that. You know, it seemed excessive that they did 220 ships for this. What I think would have been more believable would have been like a small attack wing, 6 to 8 Romulan warbirds show up, you know, and then, because all of what it had taken was one warbird to send down a few barrages of their disruptor cannon would have wiped them off the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Starfleet shows up. And Riker's there, captain of the J'Hay. That was cool. A bit of fan service. But what I would have liked to have seen was a little bit of a battle. And, you know, it would have been a bit of a cliffhanger where they send off, like, 2 warbirds to head towards the planet. And then the other 4 to 6 engage the Starfleet armada, and then Riker takes a ship, goes off, destroys the other 2, for example, and it comes back and they beat down the Romulans, and then they run tail between their legs. That would have been much better than, hey, I'm Riker, I'm captain of the J'Hay, you better shut her down or I'm going to pimp slap you.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
give me something. Give me a space battle. give me something to redeem this episode of this series. Like, don't just give me an anticlimactic end. Like,
well,
come on.
Well, one thing, you know, speaking of the fleets and everything, one thing I've always loved about Star Trek is the starship designs. You know, I love all the different Federation designs. I love all the different Romulan designs. You know, in my opinion, I love the I think it's called the D. Derrick's class Warbird, from every episode of TNG. And you saw him on Deep Space Nine during the Dominion War. I love that design.
Why? Love D. Derrick's class.
But why are both the Romulan fleet and Riker's fleet both made up of one ship of the same class for the entire fleet? Like I don't know, unless I missed it. To me, it looked like all the Starfleet ships were exactly the same, and all the Romulan warbirds were exactly the same. Like, there was no Nebula class, there was no Ambassador class, there was no Excelsior class. There, you know, it was all the same ships.
You're 100% right. I think what they did was to try to, you know, minimize costs as far as CGI. And my idea would have worked out so much better for that, because, sure, they showed up with 200 of the same ship, but it's lazy, it's lame, as you said, and it would have been much more believable to have an attack wing of 6 to 8, you know, J'Hei class ships and 6 to 8 Valdor class warbirds. That would have been believable. That would have been a better end than 200 of the same ship because you're lazy, you just want to copy and paste.
Exactly.
200 ships.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, they literally just copy and pasted the same ship over and over again. And not just that, like you said, like, they didn't need these massive extensive fleets when it was established all the way back in the original series. The original Enterprise had enough firepower to decimate a continent. That was back in the 23rd century. Imagine what they can do in the 24th century. You probably only need one ship to decimate a planet at this point. Why do you need 200
basic
ships? But anyway. But I just want to throw in one thing
sure, before we get too far and I forget. The character of Inigo Soon, where the hell did he come from? Because
yes,
if you look at the timeline, Inigo would have had to have been conceived and born before
Data.
Before Dr. Soon, yeah, before Data, but before Dr. Soon even went to Omicron Theta 3.
Yep.
He would have had to have been conceived back then and then kept secret for 70, 80 years until this point. I like the idea of the character, but where does he even possibly fit in? Because he made Ariana Soon his wife. He made Data, he made Lore, he made B4. Where did he have time between getting laughed out of the scientific community and making these? He made four androids.
Yeah, and why was he never mentioned before? You know, like in the episode Measure of Man. Like, where was he when Data was on trial for his life? Like, it actually would have been interesting if he had went there to testify with Bruce Maddox and was like, yeah, he's if he's not property of Starfleet, he's property of my dad, and we want to take him apart. You know, like, that would have been interesting. But obviously, his character was never intended to be in the franchise at all. It was a character created for this show. But that drives me nuts with modern Trek. It's like Michael Burnham. Like, you know, she grew up with Spock, but yet was never mentioned. Like, it was never a thing, and all of a sudden we're just supposed to accept that she grew up with him? Like, I don't know. Like, it definitely took me out of it a little bit. Like, if they would have explained it a little bit better, you know, like, yeah, my dad, you know, had a mistress and blah, 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 you know, like... But, you know, I didn't actually get
it. Would have been something.
Yeah, I didn't actually meet my dad, but I studied all of his notes and you know, I've assumed his name. That's why Data never mentioned me. You know, when Data built LOL back in season 3, wouldn't it have been nice to have like the super smart brother that, you know, is in the business of making androids, maybe come by and maybe consult a little bit?
I agree. Hold on, Kevin.
Yes.
Sorry, we kind of got off on this tangent between turkeys. Yeah, right. Have you been like? Have you any comments to make? I know that you're not quite as, I don't know, obsessed. Maybe the right word as we are, but I just want to apologize that we kind of just went off on it, and I didn't hear you say anything about comments and stuff. I want to make sure that your voice is heard too.
No. I was listening for it. I do have some, so I'll jump in here now for it.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin.
I'm sorry. As far as things that aren't mentioned, like, there's a big difference for something this level not being mentioned before. We were making a point, friends and I, about the Marvel Universe movies. You could easily have, well, okay, take the Black Widow one. Well, whenever it comes out now. But you could easily say, how come we didn't know this story about Black Widow? Well, we fought Loki and Ultron and Thanos twice. And maybe in the middle of all those battles, she didn't have time to tell you. So I went back to Russia and I saw my family. Like, it's logical to assume there wasn't a moment for this story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
But this is pretty big things here that they're just like, oh, yeah, we never mentioned this before. Well, it's a pretty big thing to not mention, especially with characters that have had, you know, hundreds of episodes and books and stories and everything else.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
One of the things I think, and I might be assuming here, but with all three of us being, you know, sci-fi genre fans, at some point we've all sat down to write our own stories just to see what we could do, to play around with it, whatever. And one of the lessons you learn is no matter where you think the story is going, your characters will take you where the story goes. And it might not be where you thought the story was going. You keep writing, you keep writing. You're like, okay, I did not know when I sat down to write this that this character would end up here. I thought I was taking them in this other direction. But as I wrote the story, it progressed. Whereas there's a lot of things in Star Trek here, in Picard, which seem like they're forcing characters into a plot they already wrote. Okay, we have this plot written, and now let's just put people in these spots. But that's not true to the character, though. It's just like, it's like setting up like your risk board, but not, you know, okay, I need someone here, here, and here. All right, mm-hmm. But that character doesn't go there, and that character is not going to work here. I don't care. I just need people on the board.
Yeah.
And then magically, there's a Mary Sue of an army of 20 on your board. Where did that person come from?
Yeah. And there's also the, oh, this thing happens now. Okay, well, how did we get there? And I didn't care about the character. I didn't care about the moment. You didn't let this breathe. And Chris made a good example earlier about it being rushed. And I was thinking that too. I'm like, how come it seems so long and drawn out and also rushed at the same time? You're right. It's because the initial episodes were long and drawn out and took their sweet time. And then they had to cram at the end. It's like that classic picture of, you know, someone writing think ahead and the T and the H are giant letters and they squeeze in the rest of the letters to fit on the page.
To be honest with you,
it could have been like,
I think, and this is just my theory, I don't know, I don't have any proof of this, because they did announce season two before season one ever premiered, right? Like they said, we are going to do a season two. So I almost think that they were going to draw this out for the entire season. Like, we weren't going to get to the end where we got. And I think someone at CBS or Paramount was like, no. You need to conclude this story in the first season. You know, just in case they don't come back or whatever, right? And I think that's where they were like, oh shit, we got to write, you know, we got to get this done now. Because it really felt like they switched gears.
Well,
like,
but there were, maybe it's a switching gears. It's, Rich, a little warning here. I also do a lot of blogging for wrestling, so sometimes I use wrestling examples
for things.
Fantastic. I love wrestling. I was just watching today, just as a quick aside, I started watching the TV show Dark Side of the Ring. I think that's
called. I need to get it. The first season's up for free right now. I need to get in there.
The first couple episodes are really good.
That's good to hear.
Everyone's talking the Benoit episode right now.
I've been meaning to check that out. It's good that you're that you like it there, Rich. But sorry, go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm recommended.
Well, sorry. So to go with an example here, there's a lot of stuff in Picard that just happens, and you don't have a connection to it. And it's like I was saying, here's the plot, and we'll just force the characters into the plot and supposed to letting the characters tell the plot.
Yeah.
So a wrestling example, you can call a spot a move in the ring and say, okay, you're going to be at the outside, and I'm going to dive over the top rope onto you. And that's a cool move, but it doesn't mean anything in itself. But if you had the good guy in the ring, and okay, I'm going to dive on you, and the bad guy walks further up the ramp, too far away for the dive, and then they wrestle some more, and he gets out of the ring, and the good guy wants to dive on him, but now he's, you know, behind the announcers. And I can't hurt the announcers. And you do this a couple times where the good guy can't dive on him because the bad guy is avoiding it, blocking it, doing something. The third, fourth, fifth time, whatever, when he goes for that move and hits it, you're going to get a bigger reaction. Crowd's going to go, oh, finally. Oh, my gosh. Yay. That was amazing. That's telling a story. So your dramatic moment gets a reaction.
It actually means something.
Yeah. But when you have no build to it, when you have no investment in it, it's just like, okay, well, something happened, but I don't care.
Yep. That's pretty much it. Like, they gave that reference for Captain Riker being part of the reserve fleet, so you knew that he was going to show up again near the end. And it just a couple of points like that, there's no real build up to it. And as much as I love it when, you know, Riker showed up with the Starfleet Armada, boom, I was like, that's cool. I knew he was going to be there, and it wasn't that great, to be honest. So I feel your analogy.
Well, can you imagine, Rich, if he had shown up and, say, Worf was standing beside him? Like, that would have been like, oh, my God. You know, and maybe you'd seen Geordi in the, you know, in the back, you know, at the engineering station.
Even like a Star Wars Red Leader thing. You know, Riker shows up and says other ships report in, and each ship has someone from the Star Trek universe on the ship. And you're like, oh, my gosh, everyone's here.
Yes.
That's right. You know, Captain Geordi checking in, because Captain Geordi was captain of the USS Challenger in Voyager.
That is true.
In the alternate time stream, but still, he was there. And that was really cool.
Well, honestly, like, that fleet showing up really felt like when the fleet shows up in Rise of Skywalker. It's like all these ships show up to fight Palpatine's fleet, and it's like, you know, aside from Lando on the Millennium Falcon, like, I don't, you know, and, oh, there's Wedge, but that's it. It was like, yay, team, you know, like there was nothing exciting about it. And that's kind of, yeah, like you were saying, Rich, with Riker, like, it was cool seeing him, but we needed a little bit more.
Well, if you want to see that scene done well, Endgame.
Yeah.
Where everyone shows up, and you're like, even the monks I care about, even random Asgardians I care about. I don't know who they are. They're cannon fodder, but I care. Because I have a movie to go back on. I have something to go back on.
Well, and it's funny you bring up Endgame, because that was an example that I used today, because on one of the social media platforms groups, you know, I made a comment about, you know, that basically it was a comment about how they were treating Picard in the show and how, you know, I didn't like that, you know, like, and it was bad writing. And then someone made a comment on my comment saying that, oh, you can't please fans, you know, like, it doesn't matter what, you know, what you do, that, like, you're always going to get fans that are divided and they're, you know, you're always going to get fans shitting on everything. And I said, that's not true. You know, if it's good and if it's written well, everyone's going to be on board. Like, obviously, like, in my opinion, this is my opinion, there's something wrong with Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, because it is really dividing the fan base. And if there wasn't a problem, you wouldn't have a divided fan base. For example, Avengers Endgame. There's an example of there's very few people that, you know, don't like it. You know, and obviously it did well because it broke box office records. So obviously people that enjoyed that film kept going back, and people that were interested in it came to the theater. You know, like, I'm sorry, but you don't get people who hate something going to the theater to watch it multiple times. Like, that doesn't happen. And same with
and to expand on that point after you're done.
Well, I was just going to say, and another example I used was The Mandalorian. You know, like, it, you know, a lot, you know, like, there was very few negative reviews about The Mandalorian. Like, it seemed to, you know, please a lot of the Star Wars fans, and myself included. Unite. Yeah, and united them in a way that The Rise of Skywalker didn't. So, to me, that shows if it's well-written, well-produced, you know, people will like it. You know, this theory that people just want to hate on something for the sake of hating on something is not true at all, I don't think. If it's good, everyone, you know, most people are going to like it. You will get the odd person that'll hate on something just for the sake of hating on it, because there are those type of people, but that is not half a fan base. You know, it's because it's not very good, the reason why people are divided on it. But sorry, Rich, go ahead.
I'm gonna go ahead. I'm going to agree with that, because if you look at Deep Space Nine, if you look at TNG, Enterprise, Voyager, most fans, for the most part, they're like, yeah, that's the part of Star Trek, and there's some good things I like about it, and there's some bad things about it. But those shows in of themselves don't divide the fan base. Discovery divides the fan base. Picard is dividing the fan base. New Star Wars has divided the fan base. But if you look at Endgame, for example, like you said, or Mandalorian, those kinds of shows with good writing, a good plot, and look at Cara Dune, a fantastic female character, strong as hell. And in real life, she's a badass. The actress that plays her is an MMA fighter, and she's a badass, and she will kick your ass. She's legit and a fantastic character. You know, you can put those things in there and have them be good characters, as opposed to being quote unquote Mary Sue's or just forced into there. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, she, you know, her character, she never belittles the Mandalorian. She never, you know, like, she might, you know, rib him a little bit, you know, through the,
well, they have playful banter.
Yes, exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, but she doesn't, you know, make the point of, you know, you're just a stupid man for the sake of doing that, like the way that Michael Burnham does, or that captain in that Short Trek episode where with the Tribbles, and she, you know, is calling a guy who was killed, she's basically calling him an idiot, and it's like, what? Like, this man died. Like, I don't understand why you're... Anyway, I digress.
You know, I want to touch on one thing, though.
Sure.
How is it that the synth ban was simply magically lifted?
Yes.
No real explanation aside from, you know, well, so-and-so plot armor.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, Soji, Soji, she was summoning this ancient AI race to come to our galaxy to murder all organic life. And then, of course, because she flips her loyalty, she just, you know, Picard makes her want to change her mind all of a sudden. She doesn't, so she shuts down the transmitter. But that doesn't take away from the fact that she was trying to do that. Like, why would you lift the main? Because these synths were trying to kill everyone in the galaxy. But again, that seems to be forgotten. And one thing I wanted to add to that is, okay, you know, I know we're jumping ahead, but we'll jump ahead here. The AI, like, was it just me, or did those tentacles or whatever coming out of the black hole look like Dr. Octopus's arms from Spider-Man 2? Like, that's exactly what I was thinking when I saw that.
Yeah.
Okay. So they left the synth ban. Everything's all hunky-dory. Oh, yay. Yay us. She literally made contact with this ancient alien race of machines and said, hey, come to this galaxy. We want you to kill everybody. Except for us, of course, because we're AIs. Why is that, like, is that just forgotten? Like, yes, she cut off the communication. Yes, the black hole closed. But what's to say that these ancient AIs aren't going to say, hey, you know, we received a signal from that galaxy. Let's go check it out anyway. Like, there's literally a threat that could potentially come to the Federation, to the galaxy, even more devastating than the Borg. And nobody is, like, making a big deal out of it. Like, why isn't Starfleet, like, on red alert? Like, holy shit, there's these ancient alien robots. They know that, you know, these androids on this planet were pretty pissed off at us, and they wanted to get us exterminated, but then changed their mind at the last second. Who's to say that these guys aren't going to still come anyway?
Yeah, well, same thing with the Borg. Once the Borg knew of the existence of the humans, guess what? They're on the way. And, you know, also, just before I forget again, can we not forget the fact that out of nowhere, Elnor, a humanoid person, Romulan, literally punched out androids?
Mm-hmm.
What? Like, if you went up and tried to punch Data in the face, he would look at you like you're a moron.
Really? The Klingon captain in the chase episode literally headbunts him, Data, with his ridged skull, and
yep. is
almost knocked out.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was
exactly. But these androids are... Wait, hold on. I think I just defeated myself there. The androids are more organic than not. They just have a positronic brain, I guess. But then, if they have a positronic brain, and Soji and Dodge were activated, and they became superhuman, a brain can't give you super strength?
Yeah, there was definitely some confusion there, because like on that episode where the Romulan boyfriend there was trying to kill her, like when she was in the temple or whatever, and she literally starts punching her way through the floor. You know, like they've shown her get bruises, they've shown her bleed and get cuts and everything. I don't know about you guys, but there's no way in hell I can punch through a floor. So if she's vulnerable to cutting and bruising already, how the hell does she punch through that floor without doing serious damage to herself?
Well, I mean, the Terminator can bleed. It's the skin and blood and the shell around the machine.
You're right, but there's noticeable marks. There's noticeable blemishes. When she put herself through that mm-hmm. floor, she was fine.
Yeah, just a few scrapes.
I'm a very, very strong individual, just as a physical person, and I could probably punch my way through my door, not my floor, but if I punch my way through my door, you're going to see it on my knuckles. There was no evidence that Dodge literally punched through the floor of a Borg cube and didn't come away without a scratch.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, plot armor, you know. I guess they needed her to do that, but they also needed her to look pretty, so they couldn't, you know, scar her up too bad. You couldn't have the Terminator thing. Like, literally, her punching through the floor would have ripped the skin off her hands and her arms. You couldn't have that happen, because then she wouldn't be pretty. Okay, so continuing on here. I still don't understand why Starfleet isn't, like, you know, red alert, like, you know, like these aliens might be coming our way. They were summoned, you know, like, why wouldn't they come and check things out, right? Like, and I mean, if anything, that could play into season two. Like, we could see, like, maybe Picard going to the Borg and saying, hey, we need to team up, you know, much like species 8172 or whatever.
8472.
Yeah, you might see them come into play too. Like, we might need to, like, make an alliance with these powerful races to fight this ancient race of robots or whatever they are. Tentacles. Dr. Octopuses. So moving on, Picard conveniently dies due to his brain anomaly. Like, I just don't understand why they needed to kill him. You know, like, this could have been a slow disease. You know, like, this could have been something that they could have carried on into season 2 and 3, like, if they do a season 3. I know it's rumored. And then just have him ultimately die. Like, I don't understand the need to put him in an android body. And not just that, but it raises questions now. So, the way I understood it is they copied his mind and transferred it into this golem, this new body, right? So Picard yeah. Technically did die. Like, even though he lives on after a fashion, like, he's a copy, the original Captain Picard is dead. So what did they do with him? Like, why was there no funeral? Like, you know, like, I don't know. Like, you would think the copy Picard would be like, yeah, I want to bury my original body. Because that was the original me, you know, like, but there's no mention of it. Like, it's like, you know, it happens. Now you're in a new android body that doesn't age, that I guess does age and has no superpowers or anything and will die anyway. Like, I just felt it was a plot thread that didn't need to be resolved, you know, like his aromatic syndrome or whatever that he has could have carried on throughout the series, and actually I think would have made it interesting, you know.
You know what though, I think they had to throw that in there literally just to give the Stargazer Doctor a spot on the show. They had to throw in a reason for that, but you're right, they could have just went on with it. They could have, you know, give him some you know, treatments just to get him by for another year or two, and then, or like Kevin said, just go with the whole, you know what, this is, you know, Picard's end, like they ended Kirk, and they're just like, well, hand the keys over to Rios, basically, and say, here you go, bud, it's on you now.
Yeah, like if Riker had come back with one of his ships and was like, yeah, we named the ship the Picard, hey, Rios, I'm going to reinstate you as captain. You know, what's her name? The ex-first officer there, I'm drawing a blank. Rafi, you can be his first officer. Like, that actually would have been kind of okay, actually, in my mind. So next season we would see a Federation ship. But to me, like, I didn't mind the fact that he was diagnosed with the aromatic syndrome. I kind of like that throwback to the finale of TNG where Dr. Crusher told him, you know, like, you could live many years and it could not, you know, maybe it won't do anything. And then he says, well, yeah, but maybe it will. You know, I would have actually liked to see Picard go on in season 2 or 3, if there is a 3, with this disease, because I mean, people live with diseases now. Like, it would have been an interesting take to see a Star Trek character living with a debilitating disease and learning to, you know, function with it. Yeah,
to cope with it.
Like Michael J. Fox type of thing, right? You know, to me it was a missed opportunity, I think. And yeah, like when Riker, you know, leaves to escort the well, that's another, to go back to the Romulan thing. How many chances did Commodore O have to execute her sterilization plan 5? Like, literally there's like 4 times when she's about to do it and then something stops her real quick.
Yeah, hit the button. Like,
yeah.
Boom.
Like, why would you wait? Especially if this is your lifelong ambition. Like, this is what you've been working towards. Like, she lit, like, and not just that, but I don't understand how Riker just lets her go. Like, she literally is responsible for what happened at Mars, responsible for the death of tens of thousands of Federation citizens. She's responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Romulans that weren't saved because of the fleet being destroyed. Like, how can you just...
I do have an in-lore argument for that.
Okay, well, I just don't understand how... Like, I understand there would be a loss of life, like, you know, if his fleet engaged her fleet. But, I don't know. To me, that'd be like... To me, it's like letting Hitler go. You know, like, if it came down to it at the end of World War II, and Hitler's on a ship, and they just let him sail off, it'd be like, no. You engage his fleet. You kill that guy. You don't let him walk away. But anyway, go ahead, Rich. What's your take on that?
Well, no, you send them to Brazil.
No, Argentina.
Argentina.
To be a little bit pragmatic on that, General Narod, or I can't remember her name, Commodore O, just the day before, say even 3 hours ago, 12 hours ago, was the head of Starfleet Security. She has all of the secrets that she could ever need, and it could pose a potential threat if they tried to engage her for whatever reason. I think what they should have done was change all protocols, you know, change all the passwords, reset everything, make all of her secrets and knowledge useless, and then chase her down. Because you're right, she needs to be served justice. And they didn't do that. They let her get away with near genocide. Mars was still burning, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later. The loss of life is incalculable, literally because of General Narod's hubris.
And to be fair to the writing staff, maybe that's a plot thread that they're going to address in season two. Maybe Commodore O, we haven't seen the last of her. You know, maybe that is a mission that Picard's going to undertake, is getting to her, bringing her to justice. You know, maybe it's an excuse to bring Garak into it. Who knows? Okay, so, yeah, I didn't understand why Riker didn't leave at least one of his ships behind to assist Picard. Like, leave one ship behind. You got 200 and some ships. Leave one behind. You know, just in case Picard needs some security officers, just in case he needs a shuttle, maybe.
Leave six behind. Yeah. You could handle leaving, like, a small attack wing behind.
But at least one. You know, like, you know, I don't know. I found that weird. Especially considering, like, that.
Because if nothing else, Romulans are fucking treacherous.
Yeah. How do we know there aren't other warbirds on their way? You know, like.
Right. They could have had one. You know, cloak, get behind the planet, decloak, fire, boom,
yep.
Gone. What about that?
Yep, exactly. Another issue I had, you know, when Picard died, is Agnes and the other characters barely know Picard, yet she and some of the other characters are crying profusely at his death. It's like you barely know him. Like, what, you know, and Soji, like that, I was like, really? She's crying because he died. But just a few minutes earlier, she was trying to unleash death on all organic humanoid life. Like, she was literally... Yeah, like, she literally, just a few minutes ago, was going to kill Picard, and now she's dying because he's dead. Like, I don't know. Then, after that, like, one thing I will say, I actually did like this. The scene where we see Data... the real Data, you know, he's in there. I like that. Yeah,
in the simulation.
Like, I know he looked, you know, the makeup was a little off. His uniform didn't quite fit properly. But I liked it. You know, in my opinion, Data died a hero in Nemesis. And did we need to go back and give him another death? No, but... You know, it was well played by Brent Spiner and Patrick Stewart. So I didn't mind that. You know, I thought it was kind of nice. So this whole series, and Kevin can attest to this. You know, my theory was that we were going to see Lore in this before the show ever started. My theory was that Lore was going to be the big bad of this series. And he doesn't even, like, as far as I know, he doesn't even get a mention. Like, where is he? Like, we saw B4. Like, at least B4 was taken apart and was in a drawer. Like, that makes sense to me. And I just assumed, like, at the...
Lore was also taken apart in the episode, The Descent, the reintroduction of Hugh. They showed that Lore had to be dismantled and taken apart. But what happened to
the
body?
Yeah, like, I just assumed, you know, like, because I know of, you know, the episode Measure of Man, I know of Bruce Maddox, I know that Data's still in contact with him during TNG. because, you know, he does, you know, the episode Data's Day, he's doing a log for Commander Maddox. I just assumed he got sent to the Daystrom Institute. Like, when they open that drawer and you see it taken apart, I assume that would be lore. And I assumed B4, because he was walking around and still functioning at the end of Nemesis, like, why would they take him apart? Except, you know, maybe for this, because of the synth ban, maybe that's why they did it. But it's never explained, and we never find out where he is. Like, honestly, when that brother showed up, like the Altensoon or whatever, I thought that was lore. And there's actually a video on YouTube where this guy, like, basically said, like, that's lore. Like, lore in a humanoid body. Because some of the things that he says and some of the, you know, the facial expressions and so on are very lore-ish. And it would have been so cool if they had actually pulled the trigger on that. And that would explain why we never heard of this guy before. Why he was never mentioned to Data. Why Data's mom never mentioned him. You know, why Data's dad, who left a memory chip, like, in the episode Birthright, when he learns how to dream. You know, like, at that, you'd think Dr. Soon would have said, hey, by the way, you know, I got this kid. You know, he might be able to help you out, because, just like me, you know, he makes androids and stuff. So, you know, to me, it would have made sense had it been Laura.
You know what, though? I don't know if I can get behind that theory, because Lore is the ultimate sociopath. He would have made sure that great horn in the sky went off. Oh. He would have called in the big bads. And there would have been nothing to stop him. The character of Indigo was so far from Lore, and Lore could not have turned good.
Well, no. Like, I thought going into this, it would be Lore, but it wasn't. But at the end of episode 9,
yeah,
like, he's right behind Sutra. Like, he's like, yeah, you know, don't listen to Picard. Like, they won't, you know, Federation won't listen to him. They didn't listen to him the first time. Like, he was all for Sutra, you know, and Soji summoning these ancient AIs. And why would he be? Because if he's a human, he's going to be exterminated too. But if he was Lore, you know, it would make sense, because he wouldn't care, because he is synthetic.
But if he was Lore, he would have had Picard.
Oh, yeah. Like, there. Well, I don't know. Like, Lore liked to play. Lore was like a cat that captures a mouse and plays with it before it kills it. Because he kind of did that in Descent Part 2. Like, he could have killed Picard, Geordi, and Troy, but he wanted to play with them. He wanted Data to torture them. He wanted to see how far he could push his brother. You know, so he...
But at least he had a guard on
yeah,
the
exactly,
cell.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So that, yeah, right there, that's an indication this ain't Lore. Anyway. Yeah, getting back to the end, Agnes kissing Rios, like they have that, you know, like that Lord of the Rings Return of the King ending where everyone's happy and everything, and she leans in and gives Rio a good kiss, and it seems so sweet. And I'm watching this and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, has Rios and the crew forgot that she's a murderer? Like, really? Like, why? Like, she should be in the brig. Like, why is she even walking around? Like, she's already proved she can kill people willingly. She's proven that she can lie to androids that can tell if people are lying, and she can clearly lie to them. How can you possibly trust this woman? Like, it just drove me nuts. Speaking about Elnor, he's supposed to be this badass Romulan assassin. Yet we continually see him cry and act like a scared little boy. Literally, like, in that scene when he's crying when Picard dies, he makes fists, if I'm remembering correctly, he makes fists and puts them up to his head. He's crying like a little boy, like a little scared boy. He's crying. You know, people compare him to Legolas from Lord of the Rings. He's not even close to being Legolas. Like, he's such a wuss. 7 of 9. She's a boozer now, you know. But on Star Trek Voyager, she was unable to drink alcohol, so... I don't know. I guess it makes her more interesting to be a drinker now. And then, yeah, at the end, I don't know if you guys caught this, but Raffi and Seven are holding hands.
You know what? I kind of dig that. It's a little bit of a depth to Seven Nine's character. You know, just,
and I,
it kind of makes sense,
and I
honestly
got nothing against it, but where did this come from? You know, like, if there had been some hint, you know, that there was this attraction, if they had actually had some scenes together, you know, they'd actually, you know, maybe there was some flirtation, but just...
Yeah, I want to see a couple of good... I want to see a couple of girls flirt, you know what I'm saying?
Just some build-up, like, you know, at least, like, Agnes and...
It feels like there's an episode missing.
Yeah, at least, like Agnes and Rios, at least, you know, they hooked up. Like, there was that scene where, you know, Rios, you know, being the Han Solo that he is, takes her back to his cabin.
Right. He got himself.
Yeah, there was something there, but this just was out of nowhere. It's like, I know they alluded to the fact that Seven and that gangster woman from Space Vegas that she killed, that there had been some sort of something going on between them.
Relationship.
But, you know, I don't know. To me, it just seemed out of nowhere. It's like, oh, okay. And then I can't help but feel sorry for Chakotay. Like, what happened to Chakotay? Like, I thought the Voyager ended with them in a relationship. And I know 18 years, a lot of things can happen.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, like, I'm not in a relationship with the same woman I was with 18 years ago. So I know Chakotay, maybe it didn't work out. They moved on.
I don't even think I had a relation. Like, I didn't even start dating 18 years ago.
I'm just going over my notes here. I brought up that Picard is actually in the show. He's 94 years old, even though Patrick Stewart's only 79. And we talked about the lifting of the Sith ban, but it's weird considering, you know, that Soji was trying to kill everybody. Oh, so Data wanted to die, and to me, I really felt that this was another missed opportunity by the show. Like, it was kind of cool that Data was still alive, you know, in this simulation. But then, to me, unless I missed it, they never explained why they didn't just put him into an android body, right? Like, that was it because his programming was so complicated that they couldn't transfer him? I'm assuming that's the reason. I'm not sure. Like, if I missed something, please let me know.
I think that they were really just trying to end his arc.
Well, yeah. I understand, and, like, that's what the writers were doing, but...
But honestly, it was kind of silly in the first place to have it like that, you know, as, like, a kind of a magical conscious being that's still, quote-unquote, alive.
Well, to me, I was okay with that, because it kind of reminded me of that Next Generation with Professor Moriarty, you know, where he's, like, you know, living in a little box on Barclay's desk. He's living in a simulation that he thinks is the real world. You know, so, I can understand, you know, like, they took his consciousness out of B4, and maybe they couldn't figure out how to transfer him to, you know, one of their android bodies, because, like, this is just assumptions I'm making. I don't know if this is actually true. That maybe his positronic matrix was too complicated, and they couldn't he was able to transfer his consciousness into B4 because that was a Soon android that was made by the original Dr. Soon. But because they are not as smart as the original Dr. Soon, Maddox and Soon's son, they weren't able to duplicate that. So they weren't able to move Data to a new body, which, okay. But if you can have Data exist in the simulation world, why couldn't you put him on a holodeck? Why couldn't you just make Data a hologram now? Yeah, like, they make a simulation of him to live in. Why not put that simulation on a holodeck? And if that's the case, why not have just Data be a hologram going forward? Like, I understand Brent Spiner doesn't want to do it. He, you know, he's aging. He says that, you know, like, obviously that's why he wanted to be killed off in Nemesis to begin with, because he said he's getting too old to play this immortal character. And that makes sense. But if they put him as a hologram, they could give him Brent Spiner's appearance. They can make him be, you know, an aged character. You know, there's so many possibilities. And one thing I think they could have done that would have been neat with Star Trek going forward is, why not make Data the voice of the computers now? Like, why not have Data become part of the Starfleet computer system? Now that Majel Barrett Roddenberry unfortunately passed away, so she can't do the computer voices anymore, why not have Brent Spiner be the computer now? Like there's so many there's so many different things they could have done other than just killing him. And you know, and to me, just to introduce him, like, because honestly, I didn't even know that was a thing until the scene happened, and then it's like he's asking to die, and we didn't explore this at all. And they could have tied it into Picard's visions from episode one. Like, maybe those weren't dreams. Maybe that was Data somehow reaching out to him. You know, the real Data. Like, there's so many cool possibilities that they could have went, but they just wasted it by killing him again, which they didn't really need to do because he had a perfectly fine send-off in Nemesis.
I agree. And if they brought him back just for that, I mean, why waste that much time if they're just going to kill him off?
Yes. Okay, well, let's move on to what we're hoping to see in season two. Honestly, I don't have anything specific. Like, they should go this route, they should go that route. You know, I want to see more Starfleet. Like, I really miss, you know, Picard being on a Federation ship. You know, I really wish, you know, like Kevin had said, you know, maybe make a USS Picard. Like, that would have been cool to see, you know, us back in the Federation mindset again. I think that was really something that was missing in the show. My only hope is going forward, you know, that maybe, you know, the producers and the showrunners will listen and maybe, just maybe, consult with some people. You know, maybe give Rick Sternbach a call, or Michael Okuda, or Rick Berman, or, you know, maybe some Star Trek writers like Ira Stephen Bear, or, you know, call us,
yeah,
or if they
call us, we'll talk about continuity or if they don't
want to ask Star Trek fans per se, maybe consult some novelists, you know, like Peter David, Michael Jan Friedman, you know, Dayton Ward, you know, these guys that know Star Trek like the back of their hand. Why not have them do some consulting, you know, like, especially the tech aspect of it. Like, I really miss the technobabble, you know, like the, you know, you,
yeah, that was part of the that was part of the charm, honestly, of Star Trek, was that ridiculous technobabble. Well, and invert the positronic matrix.
Yep.
You know, beam thing, majigger.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, we were talking about that you know, handheld thing that was powered by imagination. You know, if you had Rick Sternbach here, he would have came up with a way to get Rios' ship back using technobabble. But the beautiful thing about technobabble is there is a fictional science behind it. Like, Rick Sternbach is a power engineer, you know, so, you know, some of the lines in Star Trek, like, because I've taken power engineering, you know, one example that I like to use is in Yesterday's Enterprise, when, you know, Geordi, you know, they're in engineering, it's during the Klingon battle, and then you see a bunch of smoke come, and Geordi opens the panel, and then he calls to the bridge, he says, "Coolant leak. I got a coolant leak in the engine core. I can't shut it down. I estimate 2 minutes to a warp core breach." And right there, like, for when I was a kid, I was, you know, just one in one ear, out the other. Didn't make sense. But now it makes sense. You know, like, essentially, when you take the coolant out of the engine, it is now a bomb. It is now going to overheat, and it's going to blow up. You know, much like if in your car, if you emptied out all your rad fluid, you're not going to get very far as soon as you start driving without any coolant. You know, you're going to overheat, and you're going to blow up your engine. You know, like, that's real-world science that was applied to Star Trek, and it made sense. You know, giving somebody a McMuffin and saying, you know, use your imagination, and it'll cure whatever ails your ship. That's dumb. That is lazy writing. And there's people out there. Rick Sternbach's still alive. He's still out there. He's on Facebook all the time. He's always commenting on stuff. You know, super nice guy. He literally wrote the Star... Him and Michael Okuda literally wrote the Star Trek The Next Generation technical manual. Have them consult on your show to make it more believable. But anyway, that's what I'm hoping for season two. I'm hoping that they will listen to us and, you know, bring in some help and just make this show as good as it could be. Again, I don't, you know, bottom line is I don't hate this show. I don't hate it. You know, I just think there's a lot of missed opportunities. There's a lot of missed potential here. You know, like, honestly, you know, on Facebook, you know, like, you know, on Facebook, it shows you memories of a year ago or whatever. Some of my memories recently were of posts that I made about the final season of Game of Thrones. And this is a comparison I'm making with Star Trek Picard and Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones' final season was kind of shitty because there was so many missed opportunities. And just like Star Trek Picard, they rushed the ending. Like, everything was rushed. Things weren't making sense because they didn't have time to breathe. They didn't have time to, you know, logically register, you know. Something as simple as what's her name again? Raffi and Seven of Nine, you know, holding hands. Like, I mean, I'm not against them hooking up. I'm not against them being together as a couple. But, build that up. You know, give us something to indicate that's where you're going. But there was a lot of that in this show where they just went somewhere and you just have to accept it because that's what they're telling you. But anyway, Rich, what would you like to see in season two?
I'm going to be super blunt and say that I don't know if I'm even interested in the season two at this point. I watched the first season just because I had high hopes a little bit. I had some lowered expectations, but it just didn't really bring me in like Star Trek normally does. So I don't know what to expect. I did hear that Guinan was on board. There were some rumors about, you know, what if Q gets on board? Maybe if something like that happens, we'll see. But honestly, I can't say that I'm going to watch season two.
And that's, you know, like, I mean, that's your choice, Rich. You know, I'm not knocking you by saying this. I just find that sad that you know, the first season didn't captivate you enough to make you want to see season two, you know, and I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I'm going to watch it because, you know, that's just the way I am. Like, I love Picard. He's, you know, like I said, my favorite captain. I'm not happy with the way they're treating him. But I mean, this season really ended on a whimper. Like, this should have been like Avengers Endgame. Like, and I keep drawing that comparison. But to me, that's the ultimate comparison of a science fiction movie that was done right, where people were talking about it for months after. You know, people were going, you know, like, by people I'm referring to myself, were going to pirating websites to watch copies of it because they couldn't get to the theater because they were working. But they wanted to watch Endgame so much because it was such a good movie. Like, that should have been Picard. Like, you know... Picard, you know, people, it should have been mentioned on the local news, like Star Trek Picard ended its first season. And, you know, it was a ratings, you know, gem, and people loved it. And and CBS All Access is making money hand over fist because of word of mouth. You know, it's that good, but nobody's talking about it except for us fans, and half of us are not happy with it. The other half are mad at the other half for not being happy about it because the other half just likes anything that is Star Trek. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. But anyway, Kevin, what are your thoughts on going into a season two?
I mean, it's not Picard anymore. And like you're saying, that's kind of glossed over, ignored in the finale. But there's got to be repercussions of it. So, you know, they say the body is, you know, human, has no strength or anything, but he doesn't have his disease anymore. It's got to have some benefits. Can he make decisions quicker? Is his reaction time a little faster? Would he react in something in a informational way and not in a emotional way? You know, who is he still Picard, or is this, you know, you have to start having a debate about soul and what is a human, what isn't, which would then tie into the synth story of the show. Does he publicize that this is who he is now, or keep it a secret? If you have this, you know, space Cthulhu from another dimension or whatever thing come back in season two, is Picard going to be the one that steps forward and says, I'm also one of you, but I'm also human? You know, and he's the champion of it all. But I think my guess is, instead of it being a story about other races, it's going to be a story focusing on him to ask these big questions.
Yeah.
About identity, about what makes a human, about what makes you not worth it, but, you know, what makes you matter? And I think it'll be explored through him. And maybe what attracted him to the show, besides probably a boatload of money, was where this character is going next. But you gotta get through the season one to get there.
Yeah, that is true. All right, well, gentlemen, we're reaching almost the 3-hour mark, so I was going to go over, because, okay, so I want to just quickly say, what happened today on Facebook, someone called me out when I called lazy writing on one of my comments, and they said, well, you know, I'm sick and tired of people thinking that they can write better than the writers. So, you know, if you think you could do better, what would you have done differently? So I came up, I sat down for an hour this afternoon and brainstormed how I would have done Picard differently. How I would have went. I was going to discuss it on this episode, but like I said, we're approaching the 3-hour mark, and this is going to be at least, you know, an hour, well, not an hour, but maybe a half an hour. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe record this as a supplemental episode where I kind of go over this, because I told this guy, you know, listen to my pod. I didn't give, he never did respond to me, but I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to be recording a podcast. Give it a listen and you'll see what I think. But anyway, so that's I'm going to record that as a supplemental to this episode. So be on the lookout for that. So,
And sir, I just want to make one last point. Let me just say, I can't stand the fact that they call Jean-Luc J.L. Can't stand it. I think it goes along with the whole lack of respect for the character of Picard in its entirety. call me whatever you want. Call me a hater, but I can't stand it.
Honestly, you know, what's funny is I've just binged-watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, the entire series. And in, I want to say season 6, Vivica A. Fox comes on the show. And she constantly refers to Larry David as LD. Like, she doesn't call him Larry. She doesn't call him whatever. It's LD. LD, LD. I honestly think the writers were watching Curb Your Enthusiasm and were like, wouldn't it be funny if Rafi just calls him JL? Wouldn't that be, it'd be kind of like Curb Your, you know, like, cause when I saw that, I was like, Jesus Christ, like, they totally stole that from Curb Your Enthusiasm. But yeah, unfortunately, I think one of the fundamental problems of modern Star Trek is the people that are in charge of modern Star Trek don't actually understand Star Trek. You know, and I'll say J.J. Abrams, for example. He's went on record that's to say that he was a Star Wars guy. He was not a Star Trek guy. And to me, it's pretty clear. When you watch his movies, you know, they're more akin to Star Wars than they are Star Trek. You know, the pew-pew space battles, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that's Star Wars. That's not really Star Trek. But that's the people that are in charge. They're not really fans. And Alex Kurtzman himself has went on social media and said that, you know, he's not doing the, I forget how he put it, but basically he said he's doing this not for the fans. He's doing this to tell good stories or whatever. Like, he's basically saying, like, he doesn't give a shit what the fans think. Which in my mind, you know, is really stupid, because especially if, you know, in the United States, and Kevin knows this, you know, with CBS All Access, you know, Star Trek isn't free, you know, like, in the States you have to pay for it. So by pissing off your fans, you're also pissing off your customers. Not good business. Not good business.
No, it's terrible business.
Anyway, any final thoughts before we call this an episode, gentlemen? I've spoken enough. Do you guys have anything you wanted to throw out there before we call it?
I think I'm pretty good. I've got everything out that I wanted to get out, and I'm just really grateful that you invited me to do the show. Thank you again, both of you.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Kevin, any final thoughts from your end?
No, it's good and enlightening, though. I think you both, and, you know, Christopher, longer term there for expanding my knowledge on this stuff.
Excellent. All right, well, Rich, what we do on this podcast is we always end it with a little segment that we call Where Can We Find You on the Internet? So, Richard, if someone wanted to check you out on the internet, do you have a Twitter? Do you have Instagram? Do you blog? Is there anything that you do on the internet?
I do very little in general, but if you had to find me, Instagram.com/monk1002. Facebook is the same, and Twitter, I believe, is Monktorious. If you wanted to get at me for any reason, I'm always always available for questions. If anybody wants to start that conversation, I'm
excellent.
Down.
And Kevin, where can we find you on the internet, sir?
You can find my blog at maskedlibrary.com. And Mask Library is the name for, there's a Facebook page, there's a Twitter, there's an Instagram, on this podcast, of course. I guest star on podcasts on the Retro Network, and if all goes well, I will have my wrestling one starting soon over there as well.
Excellent, excellent. And you can find me at my usual spots. I do a blog, randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I'm available on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at CHRISLOC1701. That is Chris Locke, 1701. And like I said, I'm going to be recording a supplemental episode to this, which will be on the feed after this one comes out, where I basically will discuss my thoughts on what I would have done had I been had Paramount or sorry CBS come to me and said, Chris, we hear you're a big Star Trek fan. We want you to run our new Star Trek Picard show. How would you do it? And this is what I would have spitballed at him for an hour, because that's what I spent on it. And I got a couple pages here. So that will be coming. And if anything, I hope that guy on Facebook will listen and maybe it'll shut him up. But anyway, I digress. Okay, well, on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and my co-host, Kevin Deason, I want to thank Richard for coming on the show. Thank you very much, Richard. Much appreciated. Hopefully we'll get you on again. Whenever you want, we'd love to have you back.
I would love that. And one of these days, we got to have a part two to our DS9 episode from years back.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll make sure to get Curtis in on that one.
Excellent.
Too.
Actually, I'll write it down. We'll do that. We'll do a Deep Space Nine episode for sure. I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. And this was our Star Trek Picard Season 1 review. And thank you for sticking with us. I know this is a longer episode. It's been much appreciated. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.